Hello, everybody. This is Johnny again. This is going to be part two of our telethon recording, and it's another 3 hours of various different kinds of content. I let you read the show notes or just listen to find out what everything is. But again, I just wanted to give a quick plug that the donation box is still open, and if you're enjoying these recordings and if you'd like to support what we're doing for this great charity, I really hope that you'll go and make a donation after the fact over at Nintendo World Report. That's all. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Everyone else, it is
That was
time.
impressive. A three-man tight hour there.
Yeah, it is time for radio trivia. For those who don't know what radio trivia is, this is a segment where we play video game music, and it is your job as the listener to figure out what game I'm playing songs from. So the rules of the game are any game that was released on a Nintendo platform is fair play, including games that we have used in prior podcast episodes. With me as co-hosts for this segment, we got Johnny Metz.
Hi.
Got Zach Miller.
Howdy.
We got Mr. James Jones.
Mister.
Mr. James Jones, not a doctor like Johnny.
Oh, geez. Now it's gonna throw around titles.
Yeah, and myself, of course.
James Jones, Esquire.
There we go.
So the way this is going to work is we got three songs for each game, and we will not do any kind of bonus question for the sake of time. We want to be able to squeeze as many games as we can into an hour, which is a pretty tight a period of time here. So I believe for this segment you're going to be contacting James Jones, not Carl Pasadena, but James Jones.
Yep. So you what you send me, yes, send me your guesses in the IRC chat,
In the
please.
chat room, not on Skype.
Send me the guesses.
So if you don't know how to do that in IRC, if you're using the one built into our website, I believe you left click on James's name in the chat room, which that's NWR James, I assume. Is
Yes.
that you? Okay, so if you left click on that, you'll have a is it query? I don't even remember what the hell it is.
Yeah, I think it's query. I think that's the term that they use for sending a private message.
I
Yeah,
don't
it
know.
is. Okay, yeah. So you want to left click on his name and then go to query, and then you can send him a private message. Please do not give away the game in the main chat room if you're in the chat room because,
Because I will laugh at you.
yeah, well, you shouldn't. Now, remember, the order of your guesses matters. If you just spew out a whole bunch of guesses, James might ignore you. So make sure your first guess counts. You might want to wait till the second or third song if you aren't really sure.
Or wait till we start the game, people.
Okay, with that,
So, just to review, how am I identifying who is the person that we say is winners?
well, the first person you receive
Okay.
that gets the right answer on their first guess.
All right,
And if
so
no one
that
gets
is
it on the
up.
first guess, we go to the second guess.
All right, that is up to my interpretation then, if I get two people at the
Yes.
same time. Okay.
And we have prizes, right?
We do
So,
have
yeah.
prizes. You know, we haven't been doing a whole bunch of prize announcements here, but we do have prizes. If you get the game, come on, talk about the game with us. You know, tell people what it is, and then we'll coordinate offline, and you can get a select one of our prizes. That's right, we have prizes.
There's a
And
whole list, and you can pick whichever one you want there, right on the telephone page.
yep. And right now we're at. I should probably mention this. We're at $5,739. We do have some
Wow.
stretch goals. I believe they were already announced, but for $6,000, we're going for a Connectivity Live segment. And if we get to 7,000, Johnny, we're doing a retroactive with Greg. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, last year we had a stretch goal to do a live retroactive about Majora's Mask, and that went really well. And we actually got Greg to pop into that kind of at the last minute, and it was a lot of fun. So we thought, well, let's do it again. We haven't announced the game yet. We're actually trying to kind of finalize
Because
that
we
with
haven't
Greg.
picked it.
We've got
I
like
think
James's suggestion in the chat.
we
No,
have it
that
narrowed
wasn't
down
serious.
to a couple, but it'll be a pretty famous game. The idea would be that it's something that people would want to play with us and call in and would have access to. And we want to make it a little bit special. Maybe we'd do something that we normally wouldn't do on a normal podcast retroactive. So, but you know, all that would happen later. But we will do it if we hit $7,000. Now, okay, for Connectivity guys. Live, I have no idea.
Yes.
All right. Enough of the jibba jabba. Let's get on to some music.
Yeah.
My PMs are chaos now.
I bet. Man, that bass line was awesome.
Yeah, that's yeah, a good was. Song. Yeah, it's just
organ and bass.
Just to clarify, do not PM in the chat room. You have to do it separately. Don't give away the game in the main chat room.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean,
sure
you're competing
are...
with other people, so don't like blast the answer out for everybody else to see, because yeah. You might even be right.
And it doesn't count if you put it in there. Okay, we're going to go on to the second song here. Well, I suspect we have a winner at this point, but we do have one more song here for you.
We do.
We're putting on a clinic for a lot of why I like this game so much.
We do have a winner, but feel free to keep guessing so I can mock bad answers.
Thank you. we go. That was the third game, third song here. I believe we have our winner. We're trying to coordinate him to get into Skype here so he can tell the world what game this is.
That was some trippy music, yo.
Well, yeah, this game has some very trippy music, which is one of the most lovable things about it.
Absolutely.
Best I don't know the answer guess goes to K-Billy with Animal Flossing.
Lovely.
Really glad I muted before I read that one.
So give us a second here. I don't want to wait too long. So if we have some problems, we'll announce the game and he'll come in as we're discussing to share his thoughts.
Sure.
But, there we go. Looks like we may be getting Lindis in here.
Hello.
It's still connecting here. Live radio, folks, please bear with us.
It's live.
Hello.
Here.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, quit calling me a he. I'm a she.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's a lady.
She is. Yeah. You still show up as the process of connecting here, so I'm
what I'm here for.
But what game is this?
This is Earthbound for the Super Nintendo.
It absolutely is. So, of course, this came out recently on the Wii Virtual Console, Wii U Virtual Console, pardon me.
It's not on the Wii.
It is not on the Wii
Virtual Console.
It's the only game that's on Wii U, but not Wii.
Yeah. So, I actually played this for the first time on Wii U. I suspect a lot of people did.
Oh, really?
And I really had a blast, and my wife really enjoyed it, too. It was a rare opportunity to play a game together like that.
Yeah, it was my first ever RPG that I played.
Wow, you picked a really weird one to start with.
In a lot of ways.
I was big into rentals back in the day, and I saw it in the store, and I read about Nintendo Power, and I thought, why not?
That's how I tried it. And they gave me the player's guide at Blockbuster.
Yeah. Actually, no, they didn't. They didn't give me the player's guide at Blockbuster. I had to buy the game later to get it. But yeah, just very nostalgic for me, and I kind of wonder how people see it today. But it's good to hear that newcomers are still enjoying it.
I think it's still very fresh. I mean, the presentation really pops out. The visuals really are very pleasant to look at. I mean, just on an artistic level, I think it holds up really well.
I agree,
and so does the writing.
Yeah, the humor is fantastic. The localization is great.
Yeah, so, like, you know, Jenny's like, so, you know, now that we're done with Earthbound, is there any other, you know, games you can play like this? Because, you know, I want to play another game like this. And I'm like, I don't know if there's another game like that.
No, not unless you get the translated version of Mother 3.
Yeah. I mean, there are other Japanese RPGs, but there's nothing quite like that game. So.
Yeah, definitely not outside that particular series.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that really surprised me, since, I really didn't know much about Earthbound other than it was really good. I was surprised at how similar the battle mechanics are to, like, an early Dragon Quest game, maybe, you know, like, the first Dragon Quest game. And that really surprised me. I guess I wasn't expecting something that simple from a game that otherwise is a really complicated game. But yeah, that actually worked out pretty well for a newcomer.
I guess that was kind of a carryover from Mother 1, which also had that same kind of battle style, only it didn't have like the funky backgrounds. It was just like a black background, I believe.
Well, Earthbound wouldn't be nearly as much fun without the psychedelic background.
Yeah, that's part of the fun.
It's so out of place that it's kind of fitting, you know? Like, it's so weirdly just out of nowhere. It's like, why am I looking at a tie-dye t-shirt background while I'm fighting these hippie skateboard dudes? And there's no explanation. It's just weird.
Well, there are a bunch of things like that in there. Weird. I mean, the whole like coffee break scene just comes out of nowhere. And then like Dungeon Man where the music just like garbledygook? Yeah. It's like, oh my God. I think that was the point in the game where I just put down the control, like, this game is messed up.
I love it for that.
Only it took you that long?
Well, I think it just sort of settled in at that point. I'm like, you know what? This game is really something else.
Yeah, there's a point where you realize, yeah, this wasn't just them being weird. This is these people who are weird. This wasn't an act.
It's also very deliberate. You know, the sense of humor is just really off the wall, and it's also like all over the place. It's not, I'd say it's not a very consistent sense of humor, but that's one thing I like about it. Sometimes it's very highbrow and sometimes it's very lowbrow. And I just really like the mixture there, and it just, it tells things in a way that no other game does. That's yeah. That's the best thing I can say about it. There's really nothing quite like Earthbound.
That's true.
Yeah.
I haven't played it since I rented it back in the day. I should try it again.
Get it on Wii U.
It's $10, you know.
Yeah,
I know. It looks great on Wii U.
It does.
It does, and it's nice to play it on the you know, on the gamepad.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really really
Super
nice.
Super Nintendo
too.
Games look fantastic on that gamepad.
Mhm.
Okay, well yep. we should probably move on to the next game. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you. I just want to say, TUIP, I love Radio Trivia. I've listened to all the episodes, and yay. I always look forward to the next one.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So it's an honor to be here and to get to talk to you.
Thank you. Well, we're hoping to put this up on the podcast feed when we're done, so maybe we'll add some background music and clean it up a little.
Okay.
And Lindis, please contact Carl over Skype, and he will sort out the prizes.
Okay, great. Thanks
so much.
You can
pick anything from that list. Yeah, he'll sure. set it up.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's move on to the second selection.
Game mm-hmm. two. Nothing yet.
Ah, might be a head scratcher there.
I don't know it awesome.
Either. Oh, the chat's amazing. Chat right
Mike,
now
I'm not sure amazing. if you mentioned earlier, but we picked these games out one each. So this is James's selection, I guess. Well, I only did one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. Each person selects at least one, and then we have some extras in case we have time. Gotcha. That's how that worked out.
So Earthbound was TYP's pick.
That's right. I picked that game.
And this one is James, so that's probably why no one's ever heard it. But Nintendo, it's, but that's Nintendo also why it's really good.
Nintendo Fiscal Report's the best guess yet.
Wow. Talking about Yonoid.
Yonoid is incredible.
Huh. I wouldn't have guessed that game.
Well, no, because most NES games don't sound like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not Yonoid, but I just love that people are talking about Yonoid in the chat room.
Yeah, speaking of Yonoid, we are still at $5,759 here, so...
Yes, speaking of reskins of Japanese ninja games based around pizza mascots.
So bring on the money, guys. We got to get to that next stretch goal.
Oh, that's where we're going. Okay.
Yeah, we're so close to it. Yeah, I mean, $6,000.
Right, yeah, you know, stretchy live, cheese.
Live connectivity, and I'm sure as with the podcast version of connectivity, anything could happen. Anyone could be on it. There is no telling. And that would be at a later date, of course. So they have plenty of time to plan ridiculous things for it.
Yes, thank God.
Love that jazz. Love it.
Yeah, the bass line's fun on that one, too.
Radio Trivia has a long history of slap bat bass and jazz. And there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we do have a winner here. So let's try to bring in Raphael to tell us what the game is. and share some thoughts, maybe.
Maybe.
Does Raphael have the most attitude on the team?
I was going to say, I mean, he's cool but rude.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Poor guy's probably heard that his entire life.
I hate all of you.
Ninja Turtle references.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
What is up?
So, as our winner, why don't you tell us what game this is?
It's Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. That's it.
Okay.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is another one of those 3DS games that I normally don't play with the sound on, so maybe I should.
Why?
That was good music.
There is good music. You know, it's funny because before James selected this particular game, I actually had a different Phoenix Wright game in the lineup.
That's how that went down.
And and I was actually listening to the previous one, previous in quotes, but the one for four, you know, the one with Apollo Justice. And the soundtrack isn't nearly as good.
Oh, it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the low point from the soundtrack standpoint, at least in the series and in general. But Raphael, so, I mean, I know most of the people on this call have talked a lot about this game already on Radio Free Nintendo. What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I think it's like definitely a step up from Apollo Justice and bringing back like some of the stuff that made the previous games really exciting, like especially the soundtrack. I think like soundtrack is generally underrated in games like this, and especially in the court scenes when you finally get that piece of evidence that you need and the music comes up, it's really, really gets you excited. And I think that's something like a feeling that I haven't really felt in Apollo Justice.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, and it's nice also to see some of the mechanics from the previous games come up again. And it's nice to see a mix-up so that you don't do the same thing every time. Like you get the little, I don't remember what it's called, the chains. When someone has their, that's right. And also, so you get like Apollo and Phoenix's abilities that you can use. And switching up the characters.
Or whatever it is, yeah, it does a really good job bringing these characters, you know, together, but also into their own.
And the change of perspective really brings some variety into it.
What do you mean? The part where you're walking from room to room, basically, versus the investigations versus the courtroom, or?
The change of perspective in characters. Like in different cases, you control different characters. So you have a case where you are controlling Athena Sykes, which is Apollo's, I guess.
Apprentice.
Yeah, junior partner. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's Apollo and Phoenix also doing their cases.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Raphael, I think I saw in the chat room earlier that you were saying your English isn't good enough to do this, and you were wrong, sir.
Well, thank you.
It is good. It is
good.
The
only one I played was Apollo Justice, and I didn't like it.
Yeah, give this game a shot, Zach. It's at $30. It's a very good, you know, price.
It's an excellent value because there's a lot of content in there.
Yeah.
And they just released the first DLC trial.
Possibly the only DLC.
Yeah,
probably the only one.
It's just as impressive as the other ones in terms of, you know, it's not like some DLC where you can tell just sort of repackaging old stuff.
No, it's all new assets. Including,
yeah, I mean, they got new videos and all that stuff. So.
New music. And the new music's actually really good.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's cool. And it's only like $6, I think.
$6.
It's a good price. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks, Raphael. Why don't you, if you coordinate with Carl in the... I guess in Skype, and in Skype, you can take care of you, and you can select a prize. One of our fabulous prizes, as listed on the event page.
Fabulous prizes.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to move on to the next selection, which is Johnny's selection. Yeah.
Oh.
Bazinga.
Yay.
Yep. That's it.
And song.
All righty. Well, we'll play the next song while people are thinking about their guess. You might want to get your guesses in a little more quickly on this one. The songs aren't aren't as long.
Well, that was the shortest one, though.
Yeah, to be fair.
I get the feeling if you know this game, you probably already know it.
That was a pretty big hit. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you'd have to get pretty far into it.
I do think we have a winner.
Already. So we also have another song.
We have another song, but so I'll play the last song. We'll get the winner queued up in Skype.
So the best comment I've seen is from Nick Mitch in the chat, who says, pretty sure it's Mozart, you guys.
I don't know. My Grand Adventures is pretty good.
Yeah, that's closer, I think.
I can't believe you guys don't like that song.
With headphones, that gets kind of annoying.
I don't know. I always think of Karnov when I hear that song for some reason. I don't know why.
Why aren't we doing Karnov?
There's something kind of circus-like about that particular track, yeah.
Carl, could you try re-adding them?
Maybe yeah, I just spoiled it.
Oh. Oh, there we go.
It's not Karnov.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hey. Stefan, welcome. Welcome. Please tell us what game this is.
Milo's Castle, if memory serves.
Ah, of yes. Miron's Castle. Miron, right? It's Miron?
Miron's Secret Castle.
Yep. And I have actually never played the game.
Oh, what? That's too bad.
You guessed it in like 3.5 seconds.
Well, I know John.
That was a big hint that it was Johnny's selection.
He knows my taste.
I heard the music because it sounds a lot like Thief's music, if you remember that game. And those games both look similar to me.
Oh.
Yeah, I think this music actually reminds me a little bit of like those Wizards and Warriors games that Rare made back on NES.
Oh yeah,
and they have a similar kind of like faux Baroque kind of style to them. Like you can't really do Baroque music on NES sound chip, but like they tried, and you know it kind of works. It's definitely weird sounding, which is what I always liked about it. But I'm very proud that you associate me with Mylan's Secret Castle.
I do like that he's demonstrating the metagame of radio trivia.
Which, yeah, that's a there thing.
There is. It totally is a metagame here. It's actually not. Like, it is the game of radio
this
trivia.
This is out of hand. It's like, no, we just can't look at who the games are now, because I'll guess before we get a chance to ask.
So I had the distinct pleasure of watching Dr. Jonathan Metz, then probably just Master Jonathan Metz.
I was 13 years old.
I watched him complete this game.
Wow.
In person. Not from the start, thank God, but I watched him. You know,
still be there.
Wait a minute, you know Dr. Metz since he was 13?
No, he was making a joke about the term master, which is usually used for the small male child of a house.
Right. Well, you know.
Master Metz.
Someone with a master's degree, you don't call them master.
Which sounds much more impressive than doctor.
Well, you call them, hey, help.
When I was 10 years old and I was stuck in the hospital, they had an NES in a back room with Mylan's Secret Castle. I played it every day.
Aww.
And I could never beat it, but I enjoyed really it hard. When I was 10 years old.
It's really hard and it's really confusing.
You too can accomplish nothing.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, it's an unusual experience. You can get it for $5 on 3DS Virtual Console now. And if you've never played Mylan's Secret Castle and you're into weird 8-bit games, give it a shot. I'm telling you, it's not bad. It's not a bad game.
You just need a FAQ open at all times.
That would help.
No, that would make it playable. The only game designed to sell Nintendo power.
Oh, no. It's not the only game.
Well, Steven, you are not eligible for a prize. I'm sorry, because you're going to be on the telethon a little bit later. That. But congratulations on getting this one right. I'm very glad that you did.
Okay, well, I'll drop off.
All right, sir. We'll hear from you a bit later.
Okay, well, go on to Zach's selection then, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here comes the metagame.
Yeah.
It's already started.
Did that sound like boobs to you guys?
You know, it could be dinosaurs. I hate you guys.
It could be dinosaurs with boobs, yes.
Wait, the song was dinosaurs or boobs? That's what we have to choose between?
Apparently. Well, yeah.
You did identify it as a Zach game.
I'm playing the metagame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing the metagame.
Oh.
No, it's not Primal Rage.
It's Primal Rage first.
I didn't realize this game was that popular.
I know, right?
That would be kind of obscure, but
yeah.
No.
It's obscure to me.
Yeah.
It's a secret to Jonathan Lindemann or Jonathan Metz. Oh my God, why?
I am not Lino Lindemann. I can't hear myself though. Jose, turn off your stream for momentarily. And I heard at the very moment that it happened.
Yeah. All righty then.
We ready?
I didn't even think about the fact there is some double metagame going on here with this particular game. God.
All righty. Well, I'm sure everyone's figured out this is some sort of crazy franchise mashup by now. I believe we have Jose. Are you on? Jose, can you hear us?
Jose.
He might have his microphone muted. I can still hear myself, by the way.
Yeah, it's weird.
Stream back into the Skype. Okay, Jose, are you on the call? Can you hear us? Can you talk to us?
Well, echoes.
Weird.
All right, well, why don't
Welcome
we move
to
on?
The Nightmare Zone.
Sorry, Jose. You still won a prize, Jose. So please coordinate with Carl, and you'll—I believe you've already said your prize.
Yes,
but if you haven't,
already done. Yeah. So I'll tell you
sure
what's
not, your contact info.
It's not Shuntae. It's not Senran Kagura Burst. Thank you, guesses. Metagame all over the place.
It is. Oh,
go ahead.
Can I say what it is, or are we still?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Project Cross Zone.
Ah, that makes sense.
I had to be convinced to get this because I played the demo and I thought, I don't know if I mean, I like parts of this game, but I don't know if it can withhold multiple hours of play. But some friends on Twitter.
It withholds plenty of play time.
Well, exactly. My friends on Twitter told me to get it and I did. And it's really good for about 10 hours and then it just keeps going and it never changes. And they just throw bosses at you and it's. I beat that game out of spite. I hated it by the time it ended.
I made it through about 25 hours where I'm like, wow, game. You're still going,
yeah.
Huh?
So as someone who isn't really that familiar with a lot of the franchises, and my understanding or my perception of this game is that it kind of has a lot of like secondary characters that are more obscure for the fan bases.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a mix. So I mean, obviously you have like Ryu and Ken there, who they're well known. And then you have
are there any Castlevania characters, or is it just the music?
Yeah, Arthur. Arthur's
that's
in there.
Arthur's from Ghosts and Goblins.
Ghosts and Goblins. Sorry, Castlevania is.
Castlevania is not represented.
No, I think some of the monsters are, aren't they?
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
There's a lot of Ghosts and Goblins monsters.
Yeah, generic zombie-ish things. You're right.
And a lot of Resident Evil monsters, but
is Konami some of the part of this thing? I thought it was like Namco, Sega.
No, it's Namco, Sega, and Capcom.
Yeah,
that's right. It's a weird game.
About
that's right. The
cast?
Second song. Sorry, I was for in my head the second song sounded kind of like Castlevania, but you're right. It's Ghosts and Goblins, of course.
The third song is Ghosts and Goblins. The second song, I believe, is from Mega Man Legends, right?
I think it might actually be from Tron Bon.
That would be a weird pool.
Yeah.
Oh, from Tron Bon? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
About half the cast of this game is completely obscure.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful that way. It's just it's like...
The most well-known thing about the misadventures of Tron Bon on PlayStation 1 at this point is Chris Kohler's Twitter handle, right? He has more followers than people who ever played that game.
The most amazing thing about the game is the fact they got a sequel.
What? There's a Tron Bon 2?
I believe there is, yeah.
I think there are. Yeah, absurd. I think there are two Tron Bons.
I will say that the most amazing thing about CrossZone is how well it keeps, and I said this on the show, how well it keeps the characters in character despite the increasingly insane situation they find.
Very true. The writing is really good. The localization is great.
It must have been impossible to keep 30 franchises characters in character. But they did, and it's amazing.
But they managed to. And the bad guys. I mean, the bad guys are all like
everybody. Everybody stays in character, even when they're interacting with things that should make no sense.
Okay, we got 10 minutes left. I think that's just enough time to squeeze in one more game here. Ooh. We're at $5,809, so under $200 away from our stretch goal, or our first stretch goal here. Next stretch goal? I guess we've had one already. I'll just shut up and play the music.
From the next goal.
Yes.
This
creepy.
Is not Mario's Time Machine of Doom. In case
that was really
I like
creepy.
The Great
though.
Pumpkin,
I like
Charlie Brown, 64.
Good great grief! Let's go on to the next song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a debate over whether we have time for a third song. We do, but I would like to discuss the game. So
Okay.
I think let's just cut it off there. And
the third song was going to be the giveaway song.
Oh. Yeah.
Because that's the metagame.
Yeah. So let's just discuss. We have our winner here. Do you want to go by your screen name here?
Clex Yoshi will be fine, TYP. Thank you.
All right.
This is the very prelude to Bathmadads itself, Donkey Kong 64.
Are you related to Alex Kulafi?
No.
You sound although a my lot name like
is,
him.
Although my name is Alex, so.
Are you Alex Kulafi?
No. Well, I can write books about Mega Man 3, I can write books about how awful of an experience I have with this game.
Awful.
So I want the audience to understand how fast the answer I got from him was. I'm relatively certain the live stream hadn't gotten past the clicking sounds in the intro of the first song before I had his answer, followed up by the name of the level, followed up by just a recitation of how much trauma it caused him.
Yes. This is a traumatic game.
Frantic Factory is the level where you have to play DK Arcade on one life on the hardest difficulty. Oh, God. The endless bananas, the coins. I never wanted to play Jetpack in my life, and I did.
I like Jetpack. I thought that was
Jetpack was better than the main game.
I thought it was like entertaining.
I never wanted to have to do this stuff for bananas, but I needed another fix.
And yet I got 100% on it. Go figure.
I did too, Zach. I don't like that.
I think it was like 205%, wasn't it?
Yes, whatever the stupid percentage.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And I played it because the N64 was a desert, so
wow.
Oh,
no. I had not played Banjo-Kazooie, so I think it was maybe a little fresher to me.
To be fair, this game looked really good.
It did. Nintendo Power sent me a yellow VHS.
Yeah,
buy this, man. I'm like, ooh, it's a pretty red thing you put in your N64. And
I even played multiplayer.
Yes. I unlocked Crusha, and he had the grenade bomb gun I gunned the shit out of my friends as some sort of catharsis for this fucking catastrophe.
I think Crusher was unlockable.
Jeez.
This really blurs with Banjo-Kazooie 2 in my mind. I know
they're very similar.
Like they're the same game.
Type multiplayer.
When I picked the game, the idea was that I hoped they would blur in guesses, but apparently this game caused so much trauma, I got just inundated with DK64 guesses almost immediately.
You know, I think DK64 is not as bad as its reputation, and I actually would, although it'll probably never happen at this point, I'd be super interested to see like a director's cut or like some kind of like revision where they cleaned up, they took out a lot of the collectibles and just reduced it down into its essence a little bit more. And I think
there
might
be
anything
to do.
I'm convinced that if there would have been a director's cut, we would have been playing as Candy Kong and Kitty Kong collecting two more different colors of bananas.
they couldn't fit it in the first time.
You might be
30,000 bananas or my ass ain't opening this door.
Maybe we got the best version you possibly could.
Beat the hip-hop.
Yeah. All righty. Well,
there's your
Donkey Kong as you truly imagine it.
We've got the curtain closing on us here.
All right.
Thank you very much. Please coordinate with Carl for a prize.
Yep. And thank you for having me on. I'm a huge fan of all you guys, especially you, James Jones. You brighten my week every week. Every
That's
week,
a
whether it's making fun
make.
Of John or something, man.
You hear that, John?
Bye. Like signing that. Out. I'm done.
This is the first time John's listened to the podcast.
He's probably not.
All right. Well, up next, I believe we do have a discussion on space with Dr. Jonathan Metz. Is that correct?
That is correct. I don't know if this is a good idea, but we're going to try it. So, Scott.
It's okay. I can talk about the acquisition process.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We really should keep you around for the full context.
Space.
People probably don't know, but TYP was sort of works in the aerospace industry as well, although in a different capacity than I do.
Yeah, less interesting capacity.
And he didn't really go to school for it. He just kind of stumbled into it has had quite an illustrious career, but did not express very much interest in doing this segment with us. So.
I wouldn't know the first thing about actual space. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my specialty. I don't know much about acquisitions. All right. So, we're going to transition over now. And really, Scott is the host of the space Q&A. So, Scott, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here now. Hello.
Awesome. Well, why don't you announce, or I mean, why don't you sort of describe what we're doing here and why we're doing
it? I'm going to leave.
You too, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, guys. That was fun. That was really fun.
Bye.
So, what we have here stuck right in the middle of our all-day gaming telethon is a little hour-long discussion about space. If you don't listen to NWR Connectivity, this is something we've done now, Johnny and I, probably 3 or 4 times. We do little bonus segments at the end of regular episodes of the podcast, lasting maybe a half hour or 40 minutes, where we just talk about different topics involving space. Johnny has quizzed me before on rocket science, and I did not great.
No, you did pretty well, man.
It was okay.
I mean, for no prep, yeah, you did pretty well.
That's true. Oh, thank you. I'll take it. We've just talked a lot in the past. So we had a block to fill, and we're like, well, why don't we just get crazy and do a bonus segment all about space here? And that's what we're going to do. So, Johnny, you've pulled a couple topics to kind of get the ball rolling here. You emailed them to me earlier in the week.
We're going to have people call in later if people want to know things about space. And by the way, this is not going to be completely devoid of video game talk because I think – there's a weird history between space and video games. It's weird in that there's not much history, but I think in the future, I think that may be changing. So I actually have some kind of thoughts on some recent developments or some future games coming out that might be a little more related to space travel, space exploration. So we can talk about that a little bit later as well, but I would love to get questions from the audience, things people are curious about. I mean, that's really the nature of the show. That was my original thought, was that let's have a Q&A and people are interested in space. Just like I think most people are, to some extent. It's just one of those kind of naturally inquisitive topics that it captures people's imaginations, and they, most people have some opinion about, the space program or what we've done in space or what they think we should do in space. And so I was like, well, I want to talk to people about this. I want to find out what people think, what people want to know, what people don't know, and talk about it. So that's kind of, that's the background, and this is what I do, every day. This is my job, but I don't get to talk about it on the internet very much. So I thought, well, that's a good excuse. Let's do that.
There you go. So if you do have questions, I guess go ahead and post them in the main chat, and maybe our friend Carl here will take a look. And if he sees a good question, maybe he can point it our way. Or if you'd like to come on and discuss things live here on the show, also get in touch with Carl, and you could get on and we'll talk. We'll just work through it all, and we'll pick Johnny's brain. So do you want to start with some of the recent space news before we jump into gaming connections and all that kind of stuff? Because there is kind of a lot going on right now.
Yeah, it's actually been an unusually busy couple of weeks in terms of like big national headlines of real space. And like one of the really good feel-good stories lately is the International Space Station just celebrated its 15th birthday. Which is amazing. And it's been, I think, continuously inhabited for 12 or no, maybe 13 years, something like that. Okay. So the ISS was originally launched as just this one module called Zarya. It was, it basically like a, just this one piece. So it's basically kind of a standalone spacecraft. There was nothing attached to it at first, and it was Russians.
That came from Russia, right?
Yeah. They sent it up, and then they connected that with the U.S. lab, is basically what the second piece is called. And those two joined together formed the first International Space Station. And then they kind of built on it, and they built it for 10 or 12 years. They built it. They just would take up one piece at a time, just like Johnny Cash building his car in the factory. He built it one piece at a time, and they took them up, and it was like lots of really difficult hands-on labor in spacesuits out, doing lots of like literally nuts and bolts and wiring things together. And it's like, it was very much like this weird space orbital construction project. and it's very complicated, very expensive. But at this point, I think there are, I don't know, like 11 countries involved, something like that. I think it's more than 10. You know, it's a pretty huge success. And it's actually really only in the last couple of years that they finished construction of it finally. And they now can focus most of the crew's energy on actually like doing experiments and like using it as a scientific laboratory, which is what it was always meant to be. So, you know, they have 6 people up there at a time right now, plus any visitors who are there temporarily. So it gets pretty crowded sometimes. And it's really, it's a very large installation with a lot of pieces to it, a lot of different rooms. And it's pretty cool. Like if you've never seen one of those like virtual tours of the space station, like go to YouTube, you'll find basically an astronaut will just pick up a handheld camera and just float through the entire thing and just give you a tour. Here's our kitchen, here's our bathroom, here's our bedroom. And it's so interesting because none of these places look like the normal version that you would expect. You know, it's like you walk in a room and like, here's our kitchen. And you're like, what? That doesn't even, where do you even eat? That doesn't even look like a kitchen, you know, but then they'll like pull these things out of the wall and it's really cool. So I think those are really neat. And you know, I think the ISS is like probably one of the greatest things humanity has ever built. And we did it together. We did it across political lines and across language barriers and time zones and everything else. It's pretty amazing.
How do they sleep in the space station? Do they have to strap themselves down?
Yeah, they basically use bags that are like attached to the wall. So you climb, it's like a sleeping bag, and you climb into it and you zip it up. Not all the way, of course, but you zip it up most of the way. And I've heard a lot of different stories about how people like sleeping in space. I mean, I know one astronaut who says it's like the best sleep he's ever gotten in his entire life, you know, because you have – I mean, you don't have any of the loads on your body that you do when you lie down flat, you know, so like your spine doesn't get all weird. You don't wake up with like, you know, cricks in your neck and stuff like that. But other people find it very difficult. You know, maybe they miss the kind of comforting pressures against your body of like sleeping on a flat surface, or they miss having a pillow that really kind of that you can actually stay rested up against.
Right.
And it's also very noisy on the space station. There's lots of fans and plumbing and stuff all the time. So I think that kind of messes with people's sleep a little bit too, depending on how sensitive you are to that.
Sure. And then my question too, when I was reading this story before we started, you touched on it a little bit, but what is kind of the main goal or focus for the International Space Station? I mean, is the idea, I mean, is it just to perform tests and without gravity to see what happens? Or, I mean, what's kind of going on there? I mean, as much as you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably no single answer, but like the main goal, I think the most common, most important reason is they wanted a place where they could do long-term experiments in microgravity. Mm-hmm. So on all the other ones, it's like you could only keep people up there for like 3 or 4 months at a time, or it didn't really have room for many experiments, so you had to always flip things in and out of there. So the ISS is just really big. You can have lots of experiments. You can have lots of people running those experiments, and you can keep them up there for – you can keep experiments up there for years at a time. You can even keep people up there for a long time. The Russians have had people up there for I think over a year at a time before, but the longest any American has been on the station is about 8 months. And next year they're going to change that, and there's an American astronaut who's going to go up there for over a year, and it'll be the longest that any American has ever been in space. And we have lots of tests planned out for how this affects your body. And space does weird things to your body. So we're going to learn a lot from that. And it'll be a really good publicity move for NASA too, I think, because this person's going to be up there for so long. I think their perspective and the way they communicate with people back on Earth is going to really change. It's almost like being a castaway. You know, when you're separated from your own planet for that long, I think it does weird things to your mind. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what that person is like towards the end of that period, and also when we bring them back and how they readjust, both physically and mentally.
Sure. I think I've seen enough horror science fiction movies to think that this will just go awfully and everyone.
No, I mean, he's not going to be up there by himself, you know, have other people coming and going, and he'll have a lot of work to do. He'll keep busy. So it's not Ren and Stimpy Space Madness. It's not anything like that where you start eating soap. But it's very stressful, you know, and at some point, both your body and your brain, they start to adapt, you know, and the adaptations are what we're the most interested in. That's why we want people to stay up there so long, because we don't know exactly how that's going to affect you. And if we're ever going to go to Mars, or if we're going to go out to some asteroid or something like that, we're going to be out there for that long. And we don't really know for sure. I mean, we have like projections, but we don't really know for sure what will happen to people when they're in space for that long.
Right.
And I think the psychological effects to me are the most interesting, because they're probably the most unpredictable. Like, we can see trends and we can track a lot of data on what happens to your muscles and your bones and your the fluid in your head and your the size of your spine and stuff like that. But the things that happen to your mind when you're out there for that long are very poorly understood, and there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of concern about what might happen to your mind if you're isolated for that long, and how to prevent that, how to prevent you from going crazy. I mean, it really [S2] Right. [S1] Is a big concern.
Which is obviously the crux of any long-term travel in space. I mean, these are the things we need to know.
Yeah, so – another current event that's very much related to that particular topic, there was a hearing at Congress this week in the U.S. Congress,
yeah,
where Dennis Tito, who was the world's first space tourist, he went up to the Mir, Russian Mir space station in the 90s, and I believe he is at least partially the inspiration for that old man character in the movie Contact, who funds the giant portal things that they're building. And then at the end of Contact, you actually see him up on a space station. So I think there's at least partially some inspiration there. But Dennis Tito, he's a billionaire. He's been to space. You know, he's very interested in this stuff. I don't remember what he'd made his money in some other industry. I don't know what it was. But he wants to send a couple to Mars for a flyby. So he wants to build a spacecraft that they can live in for like 500 days, which is a really long time to be in space.
When I read that story, that was the most like surprising aspect of it, like nearly 2 years in the shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be a shuttle either. It'd be smaller than that. So, I mean, you'd be like in the size of like a, you know, like a bedroom probably with one other person for almost 2 years and under like extreme psychological stress and some physical stress too, because it's actually medically dangerous to send people that far away from Earth and for that long a time. So there's a lot we could learn from it. And of course, they wouldn't be landing on Mars. They would just be flying around it. And that's part of the problem, I think. A lot of people feel like, well, if we're going to go that far, why don't we just land and actually do something really historically significant? But actually sending people that close to Mars would be very historical. I mean, it would be the farthest any person has ever been away from Earth. So, I mean, that would be a really big deal. And they could do some scientific observations as they fly by. And mainly, it's just a really good precursor for actually sending humans to Mars to actually land and do things and come back, hopefully. We did the same thing with Apollo, like Apollo 8, 9, and 10. I believe they all – pretty sure if I'm not getting my numbers mixed up, but they all did these kind of lunar flybys where they just – they never got out of the ship. You know, they never landed. They never did a moonwalk, but they flew around the moon and then they came back. And we learned a lot from doing that. Mostly we learned that we could keep them alive long enough to actually do the landing. So it's a big deal. And, you know, he wants to send a couple so that they – will get along better and they can withstand the amount of time that they would be away. Mm-hmm. And he also wants to send an older couple because it relates to radiation and cancer in a really kind of a morbid way, which is that the way NASA calculates your radiation exposure when you're in space is it has to do with like your sex and your age and your physical condition. But in general, what they find, the way that they calculate it is, what's the probability that you will get cancer after you come back compared to people who didn't go to space? And that probability is a lot lower for older people because they don't live as long after they come back.
Right.
So because of that, the idea is that, well, if you're 60, 70, 80 years old, however, you know, whatever kind of age range they end up choosing, the idea is that when you come back from space, if 10 years later they get cancer, well, we can't really tell whether that was caused by them going to space or just because they're old and they would have gotten it anyway. And so we can sort of ethically, it's a little bit easier for us to send old people. Whereas if we send a 20-year-old and they pick up a ton of radiation while they're on their way to Mars and back, then they've got their whole life to develop all kinds of complications from that radiation. Right. And so it's a little bit harder to justify.
So in the scheme of things, it goes animal sent to space, old person sent to space, and then a nice young healthy person, and that's like the hierarchy there.
I don't think we would send animals to Mars because
well, not to Mars, no.
you know, a lot of animals probably couldn't actually survive that long of a time. And and animals, you know, because they're not as intelligent as humans, they can't adapt to whatever might go wrong. So if some piece of equipment breaks, the animal can't fix it, right? So it's right. In that case, it's actually better to have a human on board. Like if you're going to have a living creature, you want it to be a human because they're actually smart enough to help keep themselves alive. And a lot of other animals, you know, especially once you put them in space, they can't really fend for themselves at that point.
Fair enough. So we've got a few questions from the audience, and Carl actually has someone in line ready to come on and ask a question. So let's go ahead and pull that person in now, Carl, if that's still an option. And while we're letting that happen, let's do a little update here. Our total right now, we're at $5,889.69. So that is a mere $110 or so away from unlocking a live episode of Connectivity, which I will be a part of and will probably be great.
I'm sure it will be.
We'll see. I think the plan is to do a lot of different games. We're kind of engineering a Family Feud type game. Our next project.
Love it.
Yeah, so we'll see if that's a possibility. While we wait for Daniel to get pulled in here, let's look at some of the questions from the chat. We had Yoshi1001 ask, if the shuttle program is over, how is the U.S. getting people into space?
That's a very good question, and it's something a lot of people are confused about. When the space shuttle program was shut down because it was dangerous and way too expensive, a lot of people thought that meant NASA was closing. You know, because I mean, for a lot of people, I mean, you know, people our age, Scott, you and I, the space shuttle was NASA. You know, my mm-hmm. entire life, that was the NASA program. That was the most visible thing that they did.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, hey, no space shuttle, no NASA, right? I mean, it's logical, but that's not true. NASA is working on a new capsule that can send people to like basically past Earth, like out to the moon, out to an asteroid, eventually out to Mars, do stuff like that. They're building a giant rocket to launch that thing that's supposed to be done by the end of this decade, I think, and it would be the biggest rocket ever built by anyone. It would be bigger than the Saturn V that went to the moon. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And they're also funding some American private companies to build basically like substitutes for the space shuttle. So like basically things that just send people up to the space station back down again. And I work on one of those. I can't really talk in depth about it, but. So there are a lot of things NASA's doing. You know, some of it has to do with them doing like design and studies on things. Some of it, they're handing money to people who are doing things that they want to be done. And they also give them a lot of oversight and a lot of help to make it happen because they have so much expertise. So NASA is still very much involved. Until the American private shuttles are built, we are sending people up on Russian Soyuz capsules. And that is extremely expensive. You know, I mean, Russia's the only game in town right now. Russia and China are the only two countries that are sending people to space, and we don't work with China for political reasons.
Right.
So with Russia, they basically have a monopoly. They charge whatever they want, and boy, do they. and right now it's up to either – this may not be current, but I think in the future we're expecting that they're going to start charging $70 million per seat on the Soyuz.
Oh, God.
To get to the space station. And so that's why NASA's like, hey, we should have an American company do this for us. We can probably pay a lot less. That's what they're working on right now.
There you go.
Within a few years, hopefully you'll see that get going.
Yeah. Okay. Is this Daniel?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Daniel, how are you?
Doing pretty good right now.
Good, hey, good. So do you have a question for Dr. Jonathan Metz?
Or for
Scott? Yeah, I have.
Yeah, or for me, if you want a great recipe for a vegan three-bean casserole, I've got that for you.
You know
so
I do.
That's an option.
I have a question about life on other planets, and do you think we'll find it in our lifetime? And if so, will it be smart? Will it be dumb? Will it be nothing? Will it be something?
Yes, I do. I really do. I think we will probably find some kind of microbial life somewhere in our solar system within our lifetime. Like within the next 50 years, because we're understanding how to do that a lot better than we have in the past. We have the scientific methods. We have the scientific instruments. We have the spacecraft probes. We have the ability to send these scientific instruments and rovers and things like that to other planets. We're much better at that than we used to be. And we know what to look for a lot better. So there's a whole field called astrobiology, and it's basically the search for life in space, whether it's on a planet, whether it's in some star, nebula, something like that. And that field has come a very long way in the past 20, 30 years, and we're making a lot more progress. You know, and of course, if there is no life in the solar system, we'll never find it. But at least we'll be a lot more confident that we looked and it wasn't there, and we're pretty sure that we didn't miss it. You know, which in the past we've never really known that. We're like, well, they don't come visit us, so as far as we know, there isn't anything over there. But you know, if it is something very simple like a microbial organism, then it's obviously not going to be building spaceships and coming by to say hello. So I mean, we have to go find that stuff, and I think we will. I mean, I think it's very likely that it is out there. We're learning that there's actually a lot of water on the other planets and moons of our solar system that we never knew about until just very recently. And you know, where there's water, there's usually life. That's at least based on our very limited experience. And so, yeah, I think we probably will find life. You know, some people think we already have. I think that's mostly been debunked. There were some meteorites that supposedly came from Mars and had like fossils of bacteria or something. I think that was debunked a few years ago, but that is probably the form it will take once we discover it. And as far as like more intelligent life, you know, like animals or other kind of humanoid type sentient creatures, I think that stuff exists too, but it's probably very far away from us. And so I think it'll be much longer. I mean, it could be hundreds or thousands of years before we ever discover that stuff. I mean, it could be tomorrow, but if it happens tomorrow, it'll be because of something they do, not because of something we do. If we're going to go out and find intelligent life, I think it's probably outside of our solar system, and it's far enough away that it'll be a very long time before we have the capability to go out and detect it. But even now we're learning more about where to look for that. Like we're discovering exoplanets, which are planets that surround other stars all the time. Like there's a spacecraft up now called Kepler, and it's specifically built to look for planets in other solar systems, which we'd never really been able to directly find before just a few years ago. And I mean, there was a time I remember growing up, people told me, well, there's probably not alien life because we don't know for sure that other stars have planets. And I thought, how can our solar system have 8 or 9 planets and all those billions of other stars not have any? That's just stupid. You know, of course they have planets, we just can't see them. And now we can see them. So, I mean, this stuff is accelerating, you know, at an incredible rate. And we're learning a lot more about life in space all the time, including our own.
Well, there you go. Daniel, yeah, thanks, that's a very good question. Thanks for the question.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, bye.
See you.
All right, so we have a couple more questions that have popped up in the chat. This one, Carl included it, so we're gonna read it. It's from Bob Boob, Bo Boob.
I don't know.
So he asks, do you have to shit harder in space? Is it harder to go to the bathroom?
I don't think you have to push harder, if that's the implication there, but it is more difficult to do. It's more technical, for sure. I mean, Scott, if you remember when we did the rocket science quiz and we talked about Newton's third law a little bit, just get into some fundamental physics. And one of the things, you know, people may not realize right off the bat, but when you're in space and you use the bathroom, you know, you're pushing it out one way, it's pushing against you the other way. And you will kind of fly off in the opposite direction when you use the bathroom. And so all the toilets that are on our spacecraft have like straps, they have like handlebars, and they have straps you can put in your feet to hold you down. And then they also have fans that will suck the excrement away from you at the same time. And so they both sort of cancel out that effect. You know, it is more difficult. I've actually seen down in Houston at NASA, there's a room where they do training on the space station toilet. And it's pretty difficult. The hole is pretty small. You have to get really right on center with it. It has switches, it has fans you have to turn on. Like it's a fairly complex process to go use the bathroom. You know, it is easy to mess it up. And of course, if you miss, if you don't do it correctly, you've made a big mess that's now like floating and it's toxic, you know, like it's not sanitary. And so they're very careful and they're very concerned about it. Cause if you use the bathroom and you made a big mess and you didn't clean it up, it could cause real problems. Now you have bacteria growing in the corners because, you know, some little piece of something went over there that you didn't catch. So they have ways of sort of capturing all of this and being very meticulous, and they have a process that they go through, but it's fairly complicated and people really do train. And, you know, I've heard that a lot of people don't do very well on the trainer when they first start and they have to, I'm serious.
I believe you.
The training bathroom at NASA actually has a camera in it and they will video you. And then after you get done, you'll go with your like training manager and review the video together and watch and make sure that you did it correctly. Which seems like a very weird experience.
Right.
But yeah, they do that stuff. So
that's amazing. You know, is there a lot of cleaning that takes place, like let's say on the space station where people are staying for a long time? I mean, like you said, like with a bacteria sort of growing, how dangerous that could be in an enclosed space. Do they clean often? I mean, how do you clean?
They use wipes a lot. They have a lot of life support filters. They have scrubbers. They have decontamination devices. So they do a lot of things within the airflow to basically keep the air clean. But you know, surfaces are a lot harder because you really have to clean a surface at the surface. And so they use a lot of sanitary wipes. And then they try to be careful, right? So they try not to spill things. They try not to let condensation build up because, you know, then you have water on surfaces and bad things can grow inside of water.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to keep things dry and they try to keep things clean, but they do miss spots. And they've had cases where they find like mold and stuff like that growing in some, you know, like behind a panel or something,
where some
water got back there and no one ever knew that it was there. And then one day someone's opening it up to find out, why is this thing broken down? And what's wrong with this thing? I have to fix it. And you open it up and there's like a colony back there.
Oh God.
And, and of course they have cleaning supplies. They have ways to clean that stuff, but it's very difficult, especially when, we're lucky here on Earth in that things like dust mostly kind of settle after a while, but that's not the case on the space station or in a spacecraft. So everything just kind of floats and, you know, it may or may not stick to a surface. It's very easy for contaminants to kind of pass from one room to the next and to kind of transport around. And so they're very careful about that stuff. You know, they also do like quarantines of the crew members before they launch them to make sure that they're not carrying up viruses and things that could infect the other crew members when they get up there. So they take a lot of precautions. That's probably one of the most important things that they do.
Makes sense. So let's do an update. While we've been discussing space poop, we have reached $6,400 on our donations.
Whoa,
we've shot up all $500 all of a sudden. That
people
is a favorite
like
topic,
space
apparently.
Yeah.
So we have unlocked Connectivity Live. That's great. Now that's an obligation I have.
That is fantastic. Thank you.
And now we are on our way to 7,000, which will unlock a retroactive.
A live retroactive, which we've got it narrowed down, I think, to two games. I'm just trying to get votes from everybody before we finalize what that's going to be.
Oh, okay. You can't tip your hand yet and say what two games it's between?
No, I don't want to. I don't want to. Okay. I'm not even voting myself unless there's a tie.
All right.
I don't
know. $10,000. Johnny will say which two games if we get the $10,000. So get those checkbooks out.
No.
I'm
hoping that we'll have decided that before we, or at least by the time that we break 7,000 and we actually commit to being it.
Yeah, fair enough. That's probably good to have that all planned out. By the way, the chat loved that whole discussion. That went well. Surprise, space poop was a hit with everybody.
I can't follow the conversation, like all the meta stuff happening around the telethon. I'm totally tuned out of it right now because like this segment is so much on me that I can't really think about anything else while I'm doing it.
Yeah, your brain needs to be in the zone. Yeah.
I'm trying, man.
Now I think Carl, I think we have another person ready to come in and ask a question. So Carl, if you want to work on bringing him in, we'll do another question here from the chat. MASB asks, will telescopes ever be able to image an exoplanet in detail, like say a telescope today looking at Jupiter? And do you think it will happen in our lifetimes? Where is the technology headed? Those are my dogs barking.
That'll probably happen like in the next 10 years. Yeah. like the main way that we do it now is an indirect observation, and I'm not an astronomer, so I'm speaking a little out of my ass here, but I've read about it, at least I follow it probably more than the average person. But most of the time, the way that Kepler finds things, the way that most of our Earth-based telescopes find exoplanets, is you look at a star and you watch the brightness of the star, and you watch it over time, and you can kind of see shadows pass over it. Like, you'll see the brightness of the star change every now and then, and it happens on a cycle, like a periodic dimming of the star from our angle, right? And so finally, someone very smart said, hey, the only thing we think that could cause that is something passing in front of it, and it's blocking out just a little bit of the light as it passes between us and the star, and so that must be a planet. I mean, it would have to be big enough to actually be measurable. And so by the amount that it dims, they can determine the size of it. And by the frequency, in other words, by the cycle time that it takes for this to happen every time, they can figure out how far away from the star that planet is. And so based on those things, they've actually discovered so many exoplanets through this method that they've started to classify them based on, like, which ones are the most likely to support life based on the size, how close is it to Earth size, and how far away is it from the sun, which tells you the temperature on that planet. So, I mean, with very, very little data, we've been able to compile this huge list of other planets, and we know a lot about them. Like, we don't know if they're M-class, you know, with oxygen-rich atmospheres and things like that. We don't necessarily know the gravity of them, but we know a lot, you know. And it's the more we know about that stuff, then we can kind of focus in and find more things. And you know, basically the biggest problem to directly observing other planets in the galaxy is just that the stars are so much brighter than the planets. So it's difficult to directly see a planet because the star is so bright that you can't see the planet. And I think there are ways around that. There's like sun shades and filters and, like, you know, a lot of digital image processing and stuff like that. And I think we're going to figure out that problem very soon, actually. There's so much interest in it.
Yeah,
and we're making real progress for the first time in, you know, really ever. So it's a huge field of research. It's very popular. It's fairly well funded for a science program. It's actually pretty well funded, and everybody's interested in it. So I think we're going to make a lot of progress on that.
Awesome. Good question. MASB.
That was a very good question.
So I think we have Jose on the line now. Jose, are you here?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Jose. Yes, okay. We can this time.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so here's my question. In the Ace Combat franchise, an asteroid named Ulysses hits a fictional version of Earth and causes destruction. The nations in that world create giant super weapons that look like a mecha show, and they war constantly. So my question is, Apophis is an asteroid in real life that could hit Earth. What are we going to do about it, and what are the consequences if it hits us?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a really real concern, and I think a lot of people – well, I should say there's some people who've always been worried about an asteroid hitting Earth, you know, and especially people who study history, who know things about the way the dinosaurs went extinct. You look at some of the crater sites around Earth, and you see how big they are, and you say, this was a big deal. This might have happened millions and millions of years ago, but when it happened, it was a big deal, and it killed everything within like 1,000 miles. And, you know, if that happened now with the way that our populations are concentrated in only a few places around the world, it could be really, really bad. And then, you know, you see what happened in Russia earlier this year with that asteroid didn't even hit. It wasn't an asteroid, it was a meteorite, but it didn't even hit the ground. It just exploded over the air, but it was so large that the shock waves from it exploding in air caused sonic booms that, like, broke people's windows and drove people off the road. So it caused a lot of damage. It was much like having an earthquake. And you can imagine, like, if that's the level of damage that you have from one blowing up in the air over, imagine what it's like if it actually hits the ground. And it actually causes tremors, and it, you know, does direct damage, and you get the the dust that settles in the air could have, like, really significant atmospheric impacts. So it's really scary. Now, these are very rare events. They might only happen once every million years. But if it happens during your million years, that's not much, that's not much comfort. So there are people concerned about it. And a lot of people, I don't necessarily agree with this, but a lot of people think that protecting, like planetary protection, like protecting Earth from rogue asteroids and comets and things like that, is basically the number one reason for having a space program. You know, like, why build all this stuff and why study space and why have the ability to go to space if you can't actually defend yourself from things that come from space? And so it's not necessarily people wanting a military program. They just want us to have the capability to actually do something about it if we're ever threatened. You know, NASA, I think, sees that and they appreciate it and they're thinking about it. But really, we don't have the technology right now to really do anything concrete about it. What we do have is the ability to observe asteroids and comets and meteorites and to see them before they're coming. So at least we can kind of learn more about them as they pass by, and maybe we can make some preparations on the ground if we think something like what happened over Russia is going to happen. That was the scariest thing. That was a surprise. Like, we never saw that coming, and we probably should have. You know, we don't normally look for things like that. So I think NASA is and other space programs around the world, of course, are taking that stuff more seriously because their constituents are concerned about it. You know, it feels like a much more real problem now than it ever has in the past, and we're at least studying that stuff a lot more than we have in the past. And NASA, people don't know this very well, but one of NASA's sort of core missions right now that they're talking about doing is to go out to send a robotic vehicle out to the asteroid belt, or maybe one that's a little bit closer than that, because that's out past Mars. So maybe something that's between us and Mars, but go find an asteroid of some size. It'd be about the size of a house, probably, and build a vehicle that could basically like trap it, like a tether or some kind of cage system. It's not really clear exactly how we would do that, but we would basically grab it and then fly it back and put it in orbit around the moon. And then it's close enough that we could actually send people to it and sort of dock with the asteroid, or at least kind of hover near it close enough that we can actually get out and do drilling on it and take samples and sort of learn what are the materials inside of it and how do you manipulate an asteroid, like how do you redirect an asteroid. And so it's not a very popular mission right now, just because it's not as exciting as some of the other, it's not as exciting as going to Mars, for instance, but that's an official program at NASA, and they're working towards that. And you know, I think we would learn a lot from doing that in terms of, you know, how difficult is it, how would you really pull this off. You know, the stuff you see in Armageddon is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, that none of that would actually work. We're not going to use nuclear bombs to do it. We're not going to send up like a modified space shuttle. None of that is even remotely possible. But we can probably do something we've never tried, and we've never looked at it really seriously, but we're starting to.
Yeah. For my two cents, I believe we would just kind of cross our fingers and just hope the doctor would save us, which I think is appropriate on this, the day of the doctor.
Well, I mean, if it happened tomorrow, that's really what we would do. Because as of today, there's nothing we could do. We don't have the technology to do any of it. But we're kind of pointing in that direction. I think it'll be, I think that'll be a much more common topic over the next 50 years, probably.
There you go. Well, Jose, thank you for coming on. Yeah, thank you for the question.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Yep. All right. So let's keep rolling here. Do we want? I think. Let me see. I think we've got another question here we can look at before we maybe jump back to our news, or when we want to shift to the game connections. But here is Yoshi1001 again. He says, "What do you think about Pluto being demoted from Planethood? The company I work for named a building after it to compensate."
Yeah, I don't care.
I had a feeling this wouldn't affect you too much. There are people who hate it, but
Pluto is Pluto is Pluto. It doesn't matter what, you know, category we give it. It's still the same size that it was before. And you know, I mean, in a way, it almost made Pluto more famous and more notorious, you know, because now you've got this weird generational gap where people our age grew up learning there are 9 planets and Pluto is the one that's the farthest away, except when it's not, about half the time, and Neptune is farther and Pluto's closer. Mm-hmm. That was always super confusing to me when I was a kid. But basically, you know, it came from people, the way that happened is that people wanted to create a new category of celestial bodies that would actually promote some smaller things. So there's like a, I think there's a giant asteroid named Ceres, out in the asteroid belt. It's the largest asteroid in our solar system, and it's very stable. That one's not in any danger of approaching Earth, but it's really big, and like a lot of people have talked about building a space station there one day or something like that, you know. And it's almost as big as like a small planet. Like it's almost a moon, except it's not orbiting other planets. It's just around the sun like everything else. Mm-hmm. And so there was a push for things like that to sort of get their own category. And so someone came up with this idea of dwarf planet. And the way that they ended up defining the size range for dwarf planets, it ended up sort of promoting a lot of other bodies to now have this new category that made them sort of more famous and more interesting to the public. But it also captured Pluto because Pluto is so small. I mean, I think Pluto is actually smaller than our Earth moon. So it's very, very, very small, especially relative to the other planets. And so the category that they created for dwarf planet ended up actually including Pluto in that range. And so people say it kind of got demoted. I mean, it was always the smallest planet by a long shot. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's really not a big shock to me. You know, people just, I don't know, people think it's just really, it is ridiculous. I mean, the idea, you know, it's kind of like you talk to biologists and they have all these weird nomenclature for, you know, the kingdoms and the phylums and the genus and the species. And they really do argue about the names and the categories of things. It's like, you know, music nerds trying to decide whether something is death punk or death metal or, you right. know, black metal or black meth. Black metal, death punk, you know, and it's like, it's ridiculous, right? But it's fun. People like to talk about it. So if you really get into that and you like to argue about that kind of thing, then go right ahead. I hope you enjoy it. But it really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Beautiful. So let's move on here. But real quick, a little update. We've reached $6,510. So we are over halfway to live retroactive. So
that's
getting
awesome.
Close there. And then just to give a heads up to people for the next segment, it is Who Wants to Be Nintendo Air, which I'll be hosting with Zach Miller, a live trivia game, which everyone in the chat can come in and play. So if that's something you're interested in, have your microphones ready, your Skype's ready, all that kind of stuff. And we'll go over directions when we start it. But basically, if you're interested in playing, kind of be set up and ready to go because we'll get you in here and we'll start doing some trivia for fabulous prizes. So
yeah, man, more yeah. prizes.
Yeah.
Hey, didn't we have a question earlier about a video game? If I can scroll up to it.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here we go. That's good. Yeah, I looked over this one. This is from Swigbro, I guess. Swigbro. How well do games like Dead Space depict movement in space?
I think it's the best part about Dead Space. They do it a lot more in Dead Space 2. And in that one, they actually – and I didn't play 3. I heard kind of very mixed things about Dead Space 3, and I felt like 2 games was enough for me on out of that franchise.
3 actually does feature a lot of space exploration.
Really?
Yeah. So
right, you're tempting me, Scott.
even if you just want to rent it, right in the beginning, there's a lot. You go between like different smaller ships by traveling through space in just your suit. So that might be something.
That's very appealing, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll come to PlayStation Plus or something.
Yeah.
Or I'll get it on Steam or something like that. But anyway, yeah, I thought Dead Space 1 was good, you know, but the only way you could actually move was you could kind of push off of one surface and then land on another because you had these magnetic boots that would let you walk. It's a cool idea. You have this room and, you know, normally you only use one side of the six-sided room to walk on. But once you take away gravity, now you have 6 of them. And so it actually, you don't even have to have a very large environment to make it feel much bigger because there's so many different surfaces that you can interact with or where there might be a monster or there might be a switch over there that you need to hit. And then moving back and forth to them is interesting because it's a lot of looking up, right? If you just look horizontally out, you're only going to see the wall that's directly in front of you, but you're not limited to that. You can jump off and you can push off and land on any of the other surfaces. And so it's a very three-dimensional experience. I thought that was really exciting when I first played Dead Space, and I thought, why don't other games do this? This is super cool. Like this is what I want to do in a 3D action game.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie yet, but I instantly envisioned the game they play in Ender's Game. Like, isn't there game they play where they're jumping from wall to wall like that and kind of having to use their momentum to carry them and everything?
That's right. Yeah, they don't have magnetic boots, but they have all these structures that are kind of suspended in the middle of the room that they can grab onto. Those structures are mysteriously held in place, and they don't seem to react to people slamming into them. So,
right.
Yeah, it is similar to that, and yeah, I mean, that's my favorite part of Ender's Game. I know, shocking, but the book and the movie too, probably. I really love all these very three-dimensional, strategic microgravity combat simulations that they have. They're really fun. But yeah, and Dead Space 2 adds a different flair to it because now you have this little jetpack and you can actually control. And it makes it feel very different than in the first game because you're not just picking a wall and you say, okay, now go to that wall. And then you kind of watch this animation of him pushing off and he flies through and then he lands on the other side. Now you can control it the whole time, but it's slow, right? You have this momentum, like you apply these jets and you go in that direction. But then if you turn them off, you keep going in that direction. So you're managing your direction, your orientation, your momentum, and there are nasty things all over the place. You know, they're hiding above you, they're behind you, they're underneath you. You can't see them because you're not looking in that direction, and they make these awful sounds. And it's really exciting. You know, I think that stuff is great, and I'm actually kind of hoping that Gravity, the movie, is going to inspire like a whole new generation of video games that kind of play on some of those same themes. I know there's a game called Soma coming out. I think it's in 2015 was the announcement, but it's the next game from the people who made Amnesia. And so it's a horror game, but Soma is set in space. And apparently there's going to be a lot of like microgravity 3D scenes where you're like being, I don't know if you're being chased or if you're kind of trying to hide from monsters, or I'm not totally sure how all that's going to work out, but it's a horror game like Dead Space that is in space with microgravity scenes. And I just think it's such a great idea. If you've seen the movie Gravity, you know that stuff is really scary. You know, like when you lose that frame of reference and now everything is open all around you, the possibilities for horrible things to approach you is so much greater in 3D, you know, when you don't have to worry about gravity. And also you lose that grounded nature. Like there's something very comforting about being on the ground, you know, and when you take that away, you feel very vulnerable. You feel like you're kind of drifting out in the air, and it's very disturbing to the human mind. And it's something that, you know, astronauts really, they work hard to adapt to and to get over. I'm really excited for those possibilities. I think you can also do it in contexts that are not scary. I think there are a lot of other possibilities for video games to be in this kind of three-dimensional microgravity environment. You know, Nintendo had a game called Cosmic Walker that they announced for Wii several years ago. And they showed it once in Japan at a Tokyo Game Show, and they never showed it again. It was probably canceled, but I'm actually kind of hopeful that we'll see that again one day. I think maybe they looked at it and they said, well, our technology can't really do this right now, or we don't know how to make this a fun game yet, but we think it's possible. And I'm kind of hoping they filed it away and they're going to come back to it like Steel Diver. And give it another chance, maybe on a new generation, maybe just with a different director comes in and says, you know, this was a good idea. I want to pick this up and do something a little different with it. But that was from what we saw in the video. They didn't say anything about it, but it looked like it was basically a game about spacewalking. It was about like doing work and like figuring out how do you get from here to there and how do you, you know, do the task that you're assigned. And I think, you know, if you do it right, I think that even could be fun, even though that it may be kind of busy work, like the stuff they do on Space Station. Like maybe you're going out there and you're just using a wrench and you're, you know, installing a new battery in this thing, but you're in a spacesuit and it's hard to do and it's really interesting. So I think that's a challenge that Nintendo or some other company, I think that is a game that will be made. I'll be very curious to see how it turns out.
Don Koopman, our resident Nintendo genius, just chimed in to let you know that the company that was behind that game is now bankrupt. So I don't know if we'll be seeing that game exactly, but maybe
something like it, you know,
utilizes that in the future. Yeah. So here we have a question from, I believe this is James Jones. I don't know that it's one of our other NWR James is. He says, what is the significance of Voyager 1 or 2 leaving the solar system, and what does NASA hope to learn from the now mostly powered down satellites?
It's a really great headline, but it's not that significant because, again, like with dwarf planets, these are sort of arbitrary distinctions that we make. You know, whether you're inside the solar system or outside the solar system, people can't even like agree on where that line is. And depending on who you ask, I think Voyager has crossed that line like every year for the past 10 years, you know, because they keep moving the goalposts because there's always someone who thinks, well, it's not really out of it yet. And I think at this point, NASA has actually come out and said, well, we've kind of talked among all our experts and we've more or less come to the consensus within NASA that we think it has left the solar system, which is cool. You know, it's really exciting. It's not. The thing is, though, it's a very gradual process. You know, there's not like a fence that you go through and now you're on the other side of it.
Right.
It has to do with like the density of cosmic radiation and particles and things like that. And it's very difficult to decide when it actually happens. And ultimately, it's kind of like crossing from Kansas into Nebraska. If it weren't for that sign on the highway, you wouldn't even know.
Right.
So it's not that big of a deal scientifically. And especially because Voyager 1 and 2, they were launched in the early 70s. So they're so old, they don't have very sophisticated science on them. They're kind of like radios. They're kind of like Sputnik. Like basically they have nuclear generators on them that keep them powered even when they're very, very far from the sun, which was a great idea, and it worked really well for them. And they have antennas, and they have really tiny little simple computer that basically – you know, kind of count, they have like a timer on them, like a clock, and they can send like very simple data back and forth to the deep space network here on Earth. And that's about all they do. You know, they don't really gather very much, very interesting information. And so, you know, we can sort of keep tabs on them and we know where they are, but they're really probes in the most basic sense. They're meant to go to places that we haven't been to before. They're not really meant to do anything when they get to those places, except to verify that they actually made it there. They're not the most exciting spaceships we've ever built, you know, but they're very old and it took a long time for them to get where they are. It's amazing that they've continued to work this long.
Those are
incredibly well-built machines to work in such a harsh environment for over 30, 40 years. It's amazing that they still operate.
Yeah.
It's really a testament to NASA and the way that they did things back then.
It is. It's amazing. And it leads into the first Star Trek movie, right? Or the third one?
The first one, yeah. Star Trek the Motion Picture.
There you go.
Don't know that I would recommend watching that, but if you do, you will learn about Voyager a little bit. Yeah.
There you are. So we've got about 10 minutes left to go here. We have now reached $6,760. So what is
Hot
that?
Damn.
240 short of the live retroactive. So we are getting there with still plenty of great live telethon action to go today. Johnny, I don't know that we have any other questions. I don't know if there was something you wanted to talk about.
Man, I could go all day. You know me.
I did write you a little quiz if you're interested about science fiction space to sort of test your knowledge.
That's great. Interested. Hey, actually, one more quick note related to video games that I wanted to throw out there. I'm not sure that all of our listeners and followers would know this. There's a great DS game called Moon. It was made by Renegade Kid, who are probably now best known for Mutant Muds, but they used to make a lot of first-person shooters for Nintendo DS. And I forget the company that published those games back then. But anyway, Moon came out, is very impressive. It's a little bit of a horror game, and it's kind of a first-person shooter, but it's set on the moon, and it has like little vehicular segments where you control a robotic rover by remote control. And it has aliens, I think, and laser guns and stuff. But it's cool, you know. And like there aren't that many games that actually take place on the moon. And there aren't very many first-person shooters on Nintendo DS either. So very interesting, very ambitious, impressive project overall. It did not sell very well, but it was a cool game. And the rights to that franchise that they created just reverted, or I think at the beginning of 2014, those rights will revert back to the developer Renegade Kid. And they have publicly announced that they are interested in making a sequel to it, and that would probably be on 3DS. So I think, you know, that is potentially a really cool space game that we might be hearing about, probably not right away, but maybe in a couple of years, they're going to have something to show off for that. And I only played like the first hour or so of Moon. I had to send it off to someone else, I think, for review. But I'm really curious to see what they do with that. And those guys are so smart, and I think they're getting better and better and better as they make more games. So I'm really curious to see how it turns out. But I'm excited for Moon to make a return.
Great.
Maybe they can do like an eShop version of the original and kind of get that out in more people's hands as well.
That'd be pretty.
So let me ask a couple of questions here. I won't ask everything. I have about six or seven questions here, but let me ask a couple that might lead into a discussion about like real application of some of these things. Let's see here. Do you remember, Jonathan Metz, how the spaceship Event Horizon travels through space quickly?
You mean the spaceship that's in the movie Event Horizon?
Yeah, it's also the spaceship's called Event Horizon, but yes,
oh,
the
okay.
ship in the movie.
I don't. I've only seen that movie once. Well, I thought it was a pretty cool movie. It's very weird. Like it's really like psychological and there's like a lot of interdimensional stuff going on, and it's kind of a horror movie.
Right. It's like they accidentally found hell while traveling through space, yeah. which is actually kind
of Oh, that's right. Yeah, like space hell. I know people think that movie's horrible, but a lot of other people think it's actually secretly kind of awesome and like really scary.
I actually really like that movie. But how the ship travels is it has a drive and it creates miniature black holes to basically instantly connect like two points and arrive from one point to the other without actually having to travel the distance.
Okay.
Is that something you believe could ever actually – I mean, is that just complete science fiction nonsense? Is that something people actually can think of?
I think that's kind of like mashing up different like physics concepts that are more legitimate, but like mashing them together in a way that doesn't make that much sense. Mm-hmm. There are theoretically such things as wormholes, which are like kind of like those tunnels that you talked about. I mean, you see this in like Star Trek Deep Space Nine as a really good example of a wormhole. And we think that wormholes occur, but they only last for like infinitesimal amounts of time. And there's no way you could like predict where they're going to be. There's no way you could ever like go through them probably. So they're sort of random events that probably we could never really use for space travel. Mm-hmm. And I think they're one of those kind of theoretical things that like they're sort of predicted to happen, but we don't really have a way to observe them. So we don't really have the evidence that they do occur. We just don't have any evidence yet that they don't occur.
Sure.
So because they're predicted by equations and observations, things like that, I mean, people think they probably exist, but we don't know for sure. And so because of that, we don't actually know much about them.
Right.
But wormholes are not the same as black holes.
Right.
Black holes have mass. I mean, black holes are stars. You know, they're collapsed stars. They have mass of actually very high mass in a very small amount of volume, and they just have very, very strong gravity. Black holes are not as scary as you might think. The more you learn about them, the more interesting they are, I think, and they are very confusing because they do weird things to time. You know, they have so much gravity, they warp space time, and they do really weird things, but black holes are a natural part of the universe. They're not necessarily destructive, and they're not portals to anything. I mean, if you go into a black hole, all that happens is you get crushed into a tiny speck and you die.
No big deal.
And it will. I think if I'm remembering my remembering my brief history of time correctly, I think you will perceive that as taking a very long time to happen because you're moving so fast that time will slow down for you and it will be like a very horrible process. So maybe they're scary in that respect, but they're not a portal to anywhere else. They're just a place that has a lot of mass. And, you know, if you went into a black hole, you would be added to the mass that's already there that's left over from the star. So you're not going to any place. You're just, you know, it's a big graveyard in the sky, basically. That's all it is. I'm probably wrong about all that because, like, cosmology is really far outside of what I do. But, I mean, I've read a little bit about it at least. That's the best interpretation that I can pull out of it.
Wow. It, between the two of us, I'm going to trust your opinion on it over mine. So
well, that's what two. Concerns me, Scott.
So, yeah, if we've said this before, but if you're working on a college paper or something, don't necessarily use what Johnny says here as gospel. Don't source Johnny in any way.
This is for people's entertainment. And yeah. To get you curious and maybe you'll go and read like smarter people than me give you the details on these things.
There you go. Yeah, this should be a jumping off point.
I hope so. Yeah.
Well, we have 2 minutes. I don't know. I mean, I had one other thing I was going to talk about, which was terraforming. I didn't, but you know, I don't know if you have any opinion of that you could give quickly. I mean,
So terraforming is the process of making another planet more like Earth. It's like at the end of Total Recall, you know, they release all this oxygen from and water from the ice caps, and it makes Mars breathable for everybody. You know, you don't need a spacesuit. You don't need to be inside of a bubble. Terraforming is like a very romantic idea in science fiction. It's the idea that we can colonize other planets by making them more like our own planet. You know, if you look at the way we take care of our own planet, I don't know that that's a good idea. And there's actually terraforming. I'd never knew this up until just a couple years ago, but there's actually a big like philosophical question of whether it's even good to do that. Is it even moral or ethical to mess with another planet and make it more like our own? There's no easy answers there, but I can tell you that a lot of people think that we have not shown a very good record at taking care of our own planet, and that it's very ridiculous and naive to think that we can go to another planet and do something to it that will be anything less than destructive. And so it's actually become a factor when we build like things like the Mars rovers that we send over to Mars. We take a lot of precautions to make sure that we don't take anything biological with us, because there's a number of reasons for that. But a big one is if we're sending instruments to another planet to look for life, if we detect life over there, we want to make sure that it didn't come with us. Mm-hmm. That we want to make sure it was there before we got there and that it's indigenous. And so that's a big part of it. But also people are like, we don't want to foul up another planet with our own junk, you know. So a lot of people aren't even really comfortable with the idea of us sending machines and leaving them over there. You know, there's a lot of moon junk left on the moon from the Apollo days. We didn't bring very much back with us. So there's moon rovers and pieces of rockets and a lot of scientific instruments and shovels and things like that that we left on the moon, and it will be there probably forever. What if we send bacteria to another planet and it colonizes that planet and it starts to transform the atmosphere or the soil of that planet? You know, we've now taken a very beautiful, you know, pristine place that it has never come in contact with human life, and we've taken our diseases with us over there. You know, this goes back to like Columbus and the European explorers who conquered South America mostly through polio and things like that,
right?
And yellow fever and malaria. So there's a long history of this in human civilization, and it's a kind of thing that you would think is kind of part of the past, but now that we are exploring other places for the first time in a couple hundred years, it's coming back up in the conversation. I think it's really interesting.
There you go. All right. Yeah. Well, that brings us to our hour. So, Johnny, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this and sharing your knowledge with us.
It was a delight.
Yes, as for me and as for I think everyone in the chat, based on what I'm reading, I think everyone enjoyed that.
I really hope people like this. I mean, it's a weird thing to do in the middle of the day when we're talking about video games.
So yeah,
I really hope people find it interesting and entertaining. I mean, that's really what I want.
Yeah, there are still people in the chat, so everyone didn't leave. So yeah, okay. I think it's been a success. I think now Zach, we have you here, correct?
Yep.
All right. Zach.
Hey, Johnny.
So, Johnny, thank you. And we will talk to you, I guess, a little bit later tonight.
All right. I will be back. Thank you for having me, Scott.
Thank you. All right. So that means it is time to move on to Who Wants to Be a Nintendo-aire. Let me remind everyone about how this is going to work. So if you'd like to participate in the game, make sure you have a mic ready to go, you've got your headphones on, and most importantly, have Skype installed on your computer. What's going to happen is we're going to do fastest finger questions, just like in the real show, and you will type your answers inside the chat. So let's say we say, order these games by oldest to newest. Write the letters for the correct answers inside the chat. So write D, A, B, C, something along those lines. You don't have to type out the full names of the games. Just do the letters. And then the first person who has the correct answer will get pulled into Skype by Carl. So make sure to share your Skype name with him, and he'll pull you in and everything. And then you'll compete for prizes. And you've got your three lifelines and all that kind of stuff, but we'll go over that once we get our first contestant. The big thing is, if you're in the audience, you're in the chat right now, and you're not going to compete or whatever, first of all, don't do the fastest finger. I mean, don't be the first one with the right answer, and then you're not actually going to come in and play, because that's going to be a waste of everyone's time. And also, when we're doing the thing live here, don't
maybe don't shout out the answer.
Exactly. Don't reveal the answers. You'll have a moment if someone uses their Ask the Audience lifeline, where you can share the correct answer, you know, what you think it is. But other than that, I mean, if you want to say, oh, this is easy, I know this one, that's fine. But don't reveal the answer until we've moved on from that question, you know, to preserve the integrity of the game. And actually, I guess we already have our first contestant. We're skipping the fastest finger. We've got someone who's very excited. Sorry, guys. So what we'll do is we're going to go up to the 1,000-point question with this guy. And then after that, we will do a fastest finger and then get the next person lined up while we finish out this person's game. So that way we keep them rolling and we'll try to get in as many as we can within the hour. So, Nate, why don't you hit us with that amazing intro music here before we talk to our first guest. Perfect, perfect. So again, I am Scott Thompson. I'm with Zach Miller.
Hi.
Hello. I don't know if we properly really introduced you, and we're going to be doing now Who Wants to Be Nintendo Aware. So we have our first contestant. Is it Mason? Mason?
It's Mesa.
Mesa. Okay, great.
Yeah, sorry.
How are you today?
Good, good, good.
Good. So you were raring to go, huh? We got you in here right away.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Quite a while.
So how this is going to work, it's going to be a lot like the game show on TV. You will have three lifelines you can use if you're stuck on a question. You can A, poll the audience. You can use a 50-50, which will eliminate two of the incorrect answers. And we'll also do, instead of phone a friend, we'll do ask an expert. So we've got some other people still in this chat. I don't know if Johnny's still here. We've got Carl. We've got other people. But basically, we'll pull someone in who's around to come in and help you figure out the answer for a question if you get stuck. So we'll get someone to do that. Okay. So that pretty much does it. There'll be certain plateaus that you'll hit if you get to 1,000 and then 32,000. And then when's the other one, Zach? When's the next plateau? Do you know after 32,000?
After 32,000, I think it's
125.
It is, I think, 125. Yeah.
And then after that to the million. So if you get to those and then you lose, you won't leave with any fewer points than that. And if you win, you'll get to pick a fabulous prize from our prize selection. Maybe we'll do a couple for the top, you know, two or three. I don't know. We'll figure it out after things are all settled down. But
wing it.
Are you ready to play Who Wants to Be a Nintendo Aware?
Nothing else better to do.
I like it. All right. Zach, why don't you hit him with the first question?
All right, sir. For 100 fake dollars, which of the following is not one of Fox McCloud's wingmen? A, Falco Lombardi, B, Pepe Hare, C, Princess Zelda, or D, Slippy Toad?
I'm not going to joke around. I'm just going to go as fast as I can. C, Zelda.
Yes, Zelda is correct.
All right. So let's move right on then to 200 points. Which of the following power-ups made its first appearance in Super Mario 3D World? Is it A, Mushroom, B, Leaf, C, Double Cherry, or D, Fire Flower?
C, Double Cherry.
That is correct.
All right, for $300, Link's horse in Ocarina of Time is named what? A, Mario, B, Epona, C, Zelda, or D, Link?
B, Epona.
Correcto mundo.
All right, so for 500 points, what type of Pokemon is Gengar? A, Electric, B, Ghost, C, Psychic, or D, Water?
Ghost.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, that's my final answer.
That is correct.
Oh, God. Pokemon is not my strong suit.
All right, so this is for the money now. This is a benchmark, $1,000.
All right.
Captain Olimar hails from what planet? A, Hakotat, B, Earth, C, Kopai, or D, Corneria?
A. That's my final answer.
Okay. That is correct.
Ugh, okay.
There you go. So from now on, we will move on to some more difficult questions. But before we do that, we will do our next fastest finger to get our next contestant in line. So everyone in the chat, get ready. We're going to read a question, and it will be the kind of thing where you need to order something by how old it is, or maybe like some, you know, some kind of descriptor, maybe the size of it, things like that. So we'll read the question, and then in the chat, just type the letters. And whoever is the first one with the correct answer, we'll go ahead and get you in touch with Carl and get you all set up. I believe he posted his Skype name in here a little bit earlier. I believe it's carl.castaneda, but check up there. He'll post it again or whatever. We'll figure it out. So here is our first fastest finger question. Again, only participate in this if you are interested in playing and have the capabilities to do so. All right, so here we go. Put these Pokemon in order from tallest to shortest.
Wow. That's...
from tallest to shortest. Yeah, here we go. A, Tyranitar. B, Haxorus. C, Dragonite. And D, Noivern. Right. Let's see here. I didn't have the correct answer pulled up here, so let me investigate the chat and see who has it. So the correct order was C A B D. Let's see if anyone has that. C B or C A B D. Wow, I don't think anyone got that one. No, Zach, you have stumped them on your awful, awful
Wait,
Pokemon
Combo
question.
Did. Combo
Wait,
did.
Who?
Combo.
Oh,
by,
did he? I missed
yeah,
it. Oh, yeah, he did.
James, yeah.
All right, Combo got it. There you go. So, Zach, Carl, we'll get in touch with Combo, and we'll get you pulled in for the next game. And meanwhile, we will now move on with our current game.
Indeed.
Let me get that pull back up here. All right. Mesa, are you ready to continue on to your $1,000 or $2,000 question?
Yep.
All right, here we go. For $2,000, in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for the NES, which of these boxers does Little Mac fight in the major circuit? Is it A, Soda Popinski, B, Piston Honda, C, Mr. Sandman, or D, Don Flamenco?
Oh. Pretty sure I'm going to have to use one of my lifelines with this one.
Okay. We've got the Ask the Audience, the 50-50, or the Ask an Expert, which hopefully we can get someone in on the call who's from the NWR staff. Hopefully someone's here, or we'll figure it out.
I think I'll probably go with Ask the Audience right now.
Ask the Audience. Okay.
Yeah.
So in a second here, don't spit out the answers yet. We will have about 30 seconds, 45 seconds or so, for everyone in the chat to say what they think the answer is. And after the time's up, everyone will stop. And then Mesa will pick his answer. So let me again, I'll read the question one more time, and then you will have your 45 seconds, audience. In Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for the NES, which of these boxers does Little Mac fight in the major circuit? Is it A, Soda Popinski, B, Piston Honda, C, Mr. Sandman, or D, Don Flamenco? Go ahead. Audience, if you could please stop submitting answers now. To me, it looks like the overwhelming answer has been Don Flamenco. I don't know if you've been keeping a track on it, but that seems to be where everyone went.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess I really don't have anywhere else to go. Don Flamenco. Flamenco.
Final answer?
Yes.
Okay. That is correct. Very good, very good. So now
good job, audience.
$4,000 question.
Indeed, $4,000. Where can you find the space whale in Star Fox for the SNES? Sector Y, A, Sector Y, B, Corneria, C, Aquas, or D, Sector X?
Oh, my God.
I know. I didn't know there was a space whale. I didn't write these ones.
Oh, great. Let's, again, what are my other lifelines again?
So you can do 50-50, we'll get rid of two of the wrong answers, or you can do the ask the expert, which Carl Castaneda has volunteered to be your expert. But he does warn that he is awful, so.
You know, I'm not that much better, so.
Oh, you know what? Johnny Metz is here too, and he's also available to be the expert. As is James Jones, and he says he knows the answer. So you've got options.
I think I'll ask James.
Okay. Let's get James here on the call, and then you guys will have 30 seconds to work it out. Let's see. Hopefully we can get him in here nice and quick. James, if you could join the call. He James. Might have abandoned you. I don't know. Let's give him another second, and then we might have to switch experts. Okay, James, are you here?
Hello?
Hello.
Okay.
So I'll repeat the question, and then you guys can work it out in about 30 seconds. So where can you find the space whale in Star Fox and SNES? Is it A, Sector Y, B, Corneria, C, Aquas, or D, Sector X? And go ahead.
So yeah, James.
Sorry. Okay, I got it going. Sorry, I had to get my headset back in.
Okay. All right.
Ready.
So, go ahead, James. You guys discuss.
Oh, so the answer is Sector Y.
Oh, all right.
I don't know what the choices letters were, but that's the answer.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. That makes that easy.
All right. Well, James, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Yep.
James, I've always defended you.
So he was very confident. Do you want to go with his answer of Sector Y?
Yes.
And then is that your final answer?
It's my only answer.
Beautiful.
James, that is correct.
Well played, well played. Thank you, Mr. James Jones. Are you now ready to move on to the $8,000 question?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Who manufactured the NES Power Glove? Was it A, Game Shark, B, Nintendo, C, Microsoft, or D, Mattel?
I don't know, but if I had to guess, it would be D, Mattel.
You do still have your 50-50. You want to go without it, or...
Oh, whatever. Throw caution to the wind, right?
Okay. So you're just going to go with it. So, D, is that, yep. Is that your final answer?
Yes, it is.
That is correct.
All right.
Moving right along. Go ahead.
All right,
Zach.
16,000. Which of these inputs will correctly play the Ballad of Gales in Wind Waker?
Okay. I got this one down.
Okay. Is it A, up, up, down, down, B, left, right, down, up, C, down, right, left, up, or D, down, left, up, right?
Let's think. So the Ballad of Gales, it's the da da. Wait, no, that's not right.
I like this process.
it's so. See, I have to think real quick. So
go ahead.
There's Command one was da 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 da, and then there's Ballygale's is wind is And what are the choices again, please?
Sure. And I put them in the Skype yes, chat if you can see that. Yeah,
oh, there you go. Yeah
this
yeah,
is
yeah,
one that will be much easier to read.
Oh yeah, this, yeah. Okay, thank you. Wow, mm-hmm, great. Okay, see it's.
Don't away, go. Not you.
Oh, damn it, James. Let's see. I like to do 50-50, please.
Good call. Good call.
Yeah.
I'm sure no one, everyone is totally fine hearing you sing these songs for the next 40 minutes, but let's cut down the choices. What is left? Is C, down, right, left, up, and D, down, left, up, right.
Wow, all right. Thank you for that one. Let's see. So down, right. Wait. God, this is... you know what? Gonna go for D. All
right, now let me remind you before we do anything, you could stop right now and leave with 8,000 points, which being the first contestant, that would put you ahead for the day. And that's what the next person would have to beat you. But if you get this question wrong, you're gonna drop back down to 1,000 points. I just wanna just keep that in your mind. You could walk away right now. You don't have to answer.
Yes, yeah,
I just want you to know that is an option.
D, final answer.
Okay, final answer. Oh. That is incorrect.
Yeah. As I said it, I just remembered pulling to the right on the stick.
It is, in fact, down, right, left, up.
That's right, yeah.
So that drops you to 1,000. Still, obviously, mm-hmm, in the lead for the day as our first contestant. So we'll see where things shake out as we move on. But thank you so much for being here and being our first contestant.
Yeah, we're in.
And all right, well, we'll let him go, and then we'll bring Combo on to move on to our next game.
All right, well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right. I think we might get Combo in that quick. Is he already here?
Damn. Well, it looks like he's calling in.
Okay. Here, there were minutes, literally minutes, where the next person wasn't in yet. So this should be good if we get him in right away. Let us maybe take a look quick at the donations. We are at $6,760. So again, just a little shy of our live retroactive. Combo, are you here now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, sweet. Beautiful. How are you? Do you want to be called Combo, or do you have a name you'd like to go by?
Sure, Combo works.
Combo it is. Breaker, perhaps?
It's already going on in the chat.
I've been known to go by that.
All right. Well, are you ready to play Who Wants to Be a Nintendo Heir? I'll take it as a yes.
You can all say right, no.
Let's get started. All right, so for 100 points, which of these is not a real Game Boy? A, Game Boy Pocket, B, Game Boy Color, C, Game Boy Advance, or D, Game Boy and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat?
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
You have all three lifelines.
Yeah, don't be afraid to use them.
Let's see. I think I could go with D, final answer.
Final answer. You are correct.
Indeed. For 200, Mario has appeared on all of these platforms except for A, the Game Boy, B, Virtual Boy, C, iPod, or D, GameCube.
I mean, do you like bootleg pirate games count? Because I've certainly seen those on an iPod.
Not officially sanctioned, no.
All right. In that case, C, final answer.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. On to 300 points. Who are you trying to rescue in most Mario games? Is it A, Dr. Mrs. the Monarch, B, Princess Peach, C, Cinderella, or D, Kesha?
D would make for an interesting game, but B, final answer.
That is correct.
Okay, for 500 points, the game is called A Boy in His Blank. A, Blob, B, Crippling Fear of Bees, C, Sarcastic Cat, or D, Addiction to Painkillers.
Do you have an answer? Combo?
Combo?
Uh-oh. Did we lose Combo? Oh, yes. I see the buffering signed by his name. Uh-oh.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Well, while we let him try and reconnect, let's move on to a fastest finger. We were going to do that next anyway. Oh. So let's go ahead and keep the ball rolling there. So, audience, get to the chat, and let's do that right now. All right, I will read one of my fastest finger questions to save us all from that Pokemon issue we just had. But at least we did get one person with the right one. But let me get over here. All right. Here we go, everybody. Put these Mario power-ups in order from oldest to newest. And in fact, I will copy the choices and put them in the chat, which might make it easier for some people. Okay, put these Mario power-ups in order from oldest to newest. A, Spring Mario, B, Cape, C, Tanuki Suit, and D, Penguin Suit. So the correct answer was C, B, A, D, and I believe that makes our first winner there, GX, just beating out Lloyd Sold Out. So there you go. We will get GX into the Skype chat then for the next game, and I believe we have Combo back. Is this correct? Still got the buffering. if we can't get it back, maybe we'll go ahead and do GX in the meantime and then go from there. Maybe we can get Combo back and continue.
Hello?
Oh, he's there. Hey. Combo, hello.
Hey, sorry about that. My internet
Welcome back.
Out.
That's all right. Let's keep moving here. Did you hear the question before you were disconnected?
I did not.
Okay. Oh, okay. Zach, I'm going to reread it real quick.
The game is called A Boy in His Blank. A, Blob, B, Crippling Fear of Bees, C, Sarcastic Cat, or D, Addiction to Painkillers.
All of those sound way more interesting than this game actually is.
Aww.
A was Blob, right?
Yep. It was. Is
All right, A, final answer.
Yes, correct. Very good.
All right, and so moving on to the 1,000-point question, which is also the first plateau. So get this right, you leave with no less than 1,000 points, and those points are very valuable. You're nowhere. All right, which of these is not a Nintendo handheld? A, the Nintendo 3DS, B, the Nintendo 2DS, C, the Nintendo 3DS XL, or D, the Nintendo 2DSi?
That'd be D, final answer.
That is correct. All right, way to go. So now we move on to our next round of questions. Things will get more difficult from here. Are you ready for the 2,000-point question?
Oh, sure.
All right, Zach, take it away.
Okay, for 2,000, which of these is not a transformation in Yoshi's Island? A, car, B, submarine, C, motorcycle, or D, helicopter?
Oh, geez. This is what I get for not playing such a beloved game.
Oh.
Yeah, this is, Nintendo Air is the truth comes out.
You get off this call right now and you play that game.
I mean, if it were on Virtual Console, then...
Ooh.
Yeah, this one's on you, Nintendo. So you do have your lifelines. You can ask the audience, you can ask an expert, or you can do the 50-50.
Ooh, can you repeat the answers?
Sure.
I sure can. Which one? Oh, do you want to, Scott?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So we're looking for the one that's not a transformation in Yoshi's Island. A car, a submarine, motorcycle, or a helicopter?
Oh, geez. I know I've seen... I'm pretty sure I've seen a helicopter. Can I ask an expert?
Sure.
Yeah.
We've got Carl, Johnny, or James. Do you have a preference?
Let's go for James.
James. All right. James Jones, if you are still there, could you please join the chat again? If he has left, then we'll pull someone else in. We also have TYPs here, too. James says no. I don't know if he's not interested or if he doesn't feel confident in not able. Okay, no, he's busy right now. So, okay, Carl says he can do it. Carl, why don't you come on?
You even played this game, Carl?
Hello, everyone.
Give a round of applause to Carl, who's orchestrating everything behind the scenes and is a very, very busy man today. But he took a second here to answer a little trivia question for us.
Go ahead. I said, I am so tired and hungry, but please, Scott, continue.
All right. Let me reread the question, and then we'll give you 30 seconds to talk it out. Which of these is not a transformation in the Yoshi's Island? A car, B, submarine, C, motorcycle, or D, helicopter? Go ahead.
All right, so I'm pretty sure it's car. Like, probably at least 40% sure.
What's a hell of a percentage?
Wow.
At least?
At least 40% sure. At most 60. Jeez. I'm pretty sure it's car.
All right. All right. Well, we will stop it there. Carl, thank you for joining.
Listen, all I'm saying is when you bring in Carl Castaneda, you get results.
Yeah, you get a 40%
result, yes.
Positive answer.
Good luck, Combo. If you lose on my account, I'll get you something anyway.
All right. Okay, Combo. So Carl says he is 40 to 60% sure that the car is not in Yoshi's Island. You still all do right. have your two other lifelines, or you could take his word for it.
Oh, jeez. You know what? 50-50.
All right. Risk it. Let's have the computer remove two of the incorrect answers, and we will go with B, submarine, and C, motorcycle. So Carl was, in fact,
Carl was wrong. About the car.
So it is a good thing you did not listen to Carl.
All right. Which two are left?
Submarine and motorcycle.
All right. Motorcycle. Final answer.
All right, final. That is correct.
Yes, that's correct. So, tip to the listeners, don't say Carl as your expert.
Pick
he hasn't
anyone
played
else.
Half the games on this list.
Wow. All right, Combo. You have survived the 2,000-point question, and we move now to the 4,000-point question. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm so ready.
All right, here we go. Where do you find the spring ball in Super Metroid? Is it A, Brinstar, B, Meridia, C, Norfair, or D, the wrecked ship? You do still have your Ask the Audience.
All right, what was the power-up again? Like which item?
The spring ball.
Ooh. Jeez. What are the answers again?
A, Brinstar, B, Meridia, C, Norfair, and D, wrecked ship. And like I said, you do still have the ability to ask the audience. And if you're not sure, you are now in first place with your 2,000 points, so you can always walk away as well.
You know what? Let's ask the audience.
Okay. I will reread the question, and then audience members in the chat, get ready to provide your answer. We will go for about 45 seconds and then shut it down. So here the question is again. Where do you find the spring ball in Super Metroid? Is it A, Brinstar, B, Meridia, C, Norfair, or D, the wrecked ship? All right, audience, I will ask you to please stop providing answers now. And it looks to me like the overwhelming choice was Meridia. A couple others in there, but most everyone said Meridia.
Yeah. All right, Meridia, final answer.
Okay, final answer. That is correct.
Yay.
So congratulations to the audience. Way to go, guys. And now we move on to the 8,000-point question. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Zach, take it away.
Okay. During development, this game was known as Wario Cruise. A, Super Mario Land 3, Wario Land. B, Virtual Boy, Wario Land. C, Wario Land 2, or D, Wario Land Shake It.
Jeez. Wario Cruise, he said?
When it was in development, it was called Wario Cruise. And in fact, it was called Wario Cruise in Nintendo Power before it came out.
Shake It had the pirate thing going on.
Huh. And just to remind you, you have now 4,000 points, so you can walk away if you want. If you get this wrong, you do drop back down to 1,000, which would put you in a two-way tie. Oh, we lost him again. Okay. So we will have to wait for that. But when Carl was on, that was great. That reminded me of back when the show was originally on. It was kind of the advent of AOL, and you could hear people like trying to hurriedly type questions into Alta Vista, I guess, like on a 56K connection, like trying to find the answer for whoever called in, and it just like it never worked, and it was always amazing. Combo, I don't know if you can hear me still. If you want to type your answer in the chat, in this Skype chat we're in, that would be fine. Oh, Carl removed you. Carl, Combo wasn't done yet, but we'll get Carl but Combo back in a second, I think. Do we have GX there? Oh wait, Combo is back.
And GX.
GX is here. Hello, GX.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Awesome. I think we've lost Combo, so maybe we'll move on and give him a chance to answer this final question. Let's go ahead and do that. GX, do you want to be called GX, or do you have a name you'd like to go by?
GX, Chris, whatever's good.
Let's go with Chris. Let's mix it up a little bit. Let's do real names.
Real names.
Okay, Xbox One.
Yeah, right. So are you ready to play Who Wants to Be a Nintendo Air?
If it's my turn, absolutely.
Yes. Unfortunately, Combo we've lost him again. We'll get him back later to finish his round. But let's move on then. We've got about 20 minutes here. And, you know, before we start, let me do a little update. We are at $6,970, so $30 away from a live retroactive. So if anyone's got some change, you can throw it in there. Let's get it going. We're almost right there. All right. Let's start then here with Chris. For 100 points, which of these games was not available on the Game Boy? Is it A, the Castlevania Adventure, B, Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins, C, The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker, or D, Solar Striker?
You know, as much as I would love a Game Boy Wind Waker, I really don't think that was on the original Game Boy. I'm going to go with that.
Final answer?
That's my final answer.
All right. You are correct.
Correct, of course. There was a terrible DS Wind Waker game.
It's like all the not on this thing answers are things that I would really like to see so far this game.
All right. For 200 points, which of these characters is not in the recent DuckTales remaster? A, Huey, B, Dewey, C, Louie, or D, the T-Rex from Jurassic Park?
I'm going to go with the T-Rex just because. Shot in the dark.
Shot in the dark, yeah. It's not in there. You're right.
I'm only going that because it was a completely different studio.
Makes sense.
That's the only thing I have to go on right now.
All right. For 300 points, it's dangerous to go alone. Take this. A, sword. B, hemorrhoid cream. C, Mosin Nagant bolt-action sniper rifle. Or D, 50-gallon tub of lube.
Thank you, Cards Against Humanity.
Is that just where you're pulling the answers from at this point?
No. Most of them come from my head.
Okay, I am assuming that you have your own custom deck of Cards Against Humanity now. sword.
That is correct.
Yes. For 500 points, what does Mario say when you turn on Super Mario 64? A walking a tank? B, it's-a-me, Mario. C, oh boy. Or D, hey, I've got a beverage here.
It's-a-me, Mario.
There you go. Yes.
That's pretty good. All right. So moving on then for 1,000 points and your first plateau, which of these games is incorrectly titled? Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, Mario and Luigi Partners in Crime, Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, or D, Mario and Luigi Dream Team?
I would love to see one where they are, in fact, criminals trying to escape. but I believe it would be Partners in Crime, which should be Partners in Time or something.
All right. Final answer?
Yes.
That is correct. All right, so before we move on to our 2,000-point question here with Chris, let's go ahead and do our next fastest finger question. So audience, again, get ready. I will post the choices in the chat again because that seemed to maybe help everybody out. Let me get to those questions here. All right, copy these. Okay, here is the question. Again, the first person to get it, we'll get pulled in for the next game. Put these Pokemon games in order from oldest to newest. A, Pokemon Yellow. B, Pokemon Gold. C, Pokemon Y. And D, Pokemon Ruby.
I didn't write that one, Donald.
Right, the correct answer was A, B, D, C, which it looks like we have D, E, Dwyer. Dyer? Yeah, was the first with the correct answer. So we will get him in, get in contact with Carl, and we'll get you in for the next game. And let's go ahead and move on. Zach, if you want to take this 2,000-point question.
Oh, why not? So in Metroid, Super Metroid, and Zero Mission, where does Samus find the Morph Ball? A, directly to the left of the starting point. B, in the second room. C, after defeating the first mini-boss, or D, in a tunnel leading to the Morph Ball bombs.
And you said the Morph Ball, right?
Morph Ball.
Morph Ball. thinking back to the developer answers, I believe the whole point of it was it had to be to the left to teach players that it was supposed to, that it goes left and right. So I'm going to say to the left of the start.
Final answer?
Final answer.
You are correct, of course. Have you not played these games?
Hmm?
Have you not played these games?
No, but I don't know. I'm a showman, if nothing else.
I gotcha.
All right, so let's
come on. You gotta play this up. It's for the people,
for the cameras.
For
4,000 points, what are the enemy reptiles in the Donkey Kong Country series called? Are they A, Kronklings, B, Chemchems, C, Kremlings, or D, Crocs?
What was the first one?
Kronklings.
That sounds like a snack food. Kremlings.
Final answer?
Final answer.
Correct. So you will now move on to the 8,000 point question. You have all your lifelines still, which is great. And I believe 8,000 is where Combo left off. So I guess ostensibly that puts you guys at a tie, depending on his actions when he gets back in. So,
yeah. So in Link's Awakening, excuse me. In Link's Awakening, what character gives you a stick? A, the chief bear in Animal Village. B, Kiki the monkey. C, Chain Chomp pup. Or D, the alligator on the beach, whose name I don't know.
Okay. I think the alligator gives you the pineapple or some sort. No, banana. Or does he want the bananas?
Yes, now you have to go through the whole trading sequence in your head.
Give me 50-50.
Oh.
All right, I guess Zach's going to make me do it. All right.
I don't know how to do it.
Move two of the incorrect answers.
Just two of the wrong ones away. I believe that's how that works.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
We pretend there's a computer here, but I just do it myself.
Oh.
So we have Kiki the monkey and Chain Chomp pup.
Oh, then Kiki. Final answer.
Final answer?
Final answer.
It is the monkey.
Woo!
All right, so moving right along, we are at the 16,000 point question. I've got your two lifelines left, and let's get started. One of these things is not like the other. One is
sing
these
it,
things.
Sing it. Sing
I will
it.
Not. One of these things just doesn't belong. A, Adon from Turok 2. B, Samus from Metroid 2. C, Andromeda from Conduit 2. Or D, Miranda Lawson from Mass Effect 2.
Okay. Okay. Dear God. Is the question in the one of the windows?
Oh, yeah, here, I can put it in there. All right. There you are. It is now in our Skype chat, so.
Okay. Jesus. I'm gonna go with call an expert.
Call an expert, okay. Who would you like to call? I think we've got Carl still, which went so well last time. We have TYP. We have I think Johnny's still around. I'm not sure if James is back.
I might have to go with James just because one of the choices involves Conduit 2.
Okay. All right. Let's get James on the call then. I believe he is around. He said he might know the answer. So that is a step up. from our last call an expert.
Where are you at, Jones?
Give me a minute here. If not, I know Johnny's here. Give him a second. Anything? Johnny, if you're here, if you want to jump in. Okay, no, we got James. James is here. Hello, James.
Is it working?
Yep. Welcome back.
Hey, that's nice.
Reread the question, and we'll give you 30 seconds to work it on out. All right. So this is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong. Adon from Turok 2, Samus from Metroid 2, Andromeda Ransom from Mass Effect 2. And go.
So, all of these, Adon is a character, Andromeda is not the character you're playing as, nor is Miranda. So, my tell is.
No one else rolls into a bug. They only have familiar one of those games.
So, Adon's like the guide character.
Okay.
And Andromeda, I've read a little about Conduit too, but I believe she's a similar role. And of course, Miranda is a member who also sort of acts as revived Shepard.
Okay, James.
All right, that is time. James, thank you for jumping on. All right.
Not sarcastic, thank you.
That would go to Carl.
So he leaned towards Samus. You still hear Ask the Audience, and you could always step away if you'd like and leave with 8,000 points.
The logic is everything he said, as long as those game roles are accurate, which, I mean, to my knowledge, he's played all the games, so I'm going to go with Samus.
Final answer.
Yeah. just loop that it for another 30 seconds.
Incorrect.
So what is the logic behind it?
Zach wrote this question. Zach, go ahead.
Never except Miranda Lawson and Mass Effect 2 are on Nintendo systems.
Oh, come on.
As a secondary reason, Adon, Samus, and Andromeda are all armored. Miranda Lawson is not.
Okay, wow. Maybe I'll give you at least the Nintendo one.
So that drops you to 1,000 in an absolute combo. So thank you, Chris, for being here.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. All right, Carl, can we get Combo back in? Is he here so we can finish his round before on? Let us see. But while we wait for Combo, big news, we have hit $7,000.
Oh,
we
man.
Have done it. Congratulations, everyone.
Now they can
everyone.
Do that Senran Kagura retroactive. Yeah.
So congratulations, everyone. Well, that's amazing that we've gotten to that point. That unlocks the retroactive live. Incredible stuff. Thank you, everybody. I think, Combo, do we have you here?
Yeah, hi.
Yep. Hello. All right. So you are back.
Sorry about that.
Cliffhanger. I hope you weren't using Google then to talk about this last one. Let me go back to that one. I believe we were on the Wario question. Is that correct?
Yep.
I think so.
Okay. So we have, during development, this game was known as Wario Cruise. We have Super Mario Land 3, Wario Land. B, Virtual Boy, Wario Land. C, Wario Land 2. D, Wario Land Shake It. I will remind you, I believe you've used all your lifelines at this point. And you right now, if you walked away, you would be in first place. Everyone else is down to 1,000, so that is an option.
I'd shake it, just because it has boats and stuff. Mm-hmm. That would make sense of crews and whatnot. But maybe the answer is doozy, I don't know. You know what? I'm just going to walk.
Going to walk away. Yeah. First, do it, and I applaud you for doing those. So, just for fun here, what would have been your answer?
Probably shake it.
Okay, well, good thing you walked away. That would have been incorrect. The correct answer was Virtual Boy Wario Land. It was known as Wario Cruise in development.
It's even called Wario Cruise on the back of the Virtual Boy.
Oh, look at that. So thank you, Combo, for playing and coming back. And that leaves you in first place right now with 4,000 points. I think we'll have enough for one more quick game here. So, Combo, thank you. We'll send you on your way. And let's see if we can go ahead and get D.E. Dwyer in here now. Carl is typing. He's here. Let's see if he calls in. All right, we will try to get him in here. Donnie, are you here?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am very good. How are you guys?
Oh, doing great, doing great. I think all the musical cues and all that good just burn on through this and see if you can beat 4,000 and claim first prize, first place today. Are you ready for that?
I am very ready.
All right, I will start off then. For 100 points, the first enemy you see in Super Mario Bros. Is A, Goomba, B, Pikachu, C, one deer that has fangs.
I'm going to go with Goomba, final answer.
Correct.
Okay, 200 points. In Pokemon Yellow, what Tyranitar, Pikachu, Mewtwo, or Magikarp?
I believe that would be Pikachu.
Yes, sir.
All right. For 300 points, in Paperboy, what is the protagonist's job? Is he A, milkman, B, a door-to-door salesman, C, a secret ninja, Paperboy?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with Paperboy.
That is correct.
500 points. What was the pack-in game for the Wii when it first came out? Wii Sports, Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, or Nintendo Land?
I believe that's Wii Sports.
Yes, sir.
All right. So for 1,000 points in your first plateau, what was the last console to see a proper F-Zero game? A, the Super, B, GameCube, or D, the Wii?
GameCube.
Final answer?
Wait. Can you say the answers again?
Yeah.
The last console to have F-Zero on it?
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
The Super Nintendo, the GameCube, the N64, or the Wii?
Wii.
That is incorrect. Unfortunately.
Does Virtual Console not count?
Well, you know what? We'll give it to you just because, yeah, on technicality, I guess you would be right.
I guess that's
specify
right.
A new F-Zero game. So,
yeah.
Still a game.
Okay. 2,000 points. Released in 1995, this Nintendo system was an unmeted disaster, disappearing from stores within a year. Virtual Boy, Game Boy Pocket, N64, SNES 101. That's the redesigned Super Nintendo.
Of course. Virtual Boy? I almost said Virtual Console.
Yes, that's correct. I love my Virtual Boy.
All right. So, for 4,000 points, and I believe you, if you get this one right, you will be tied for first place, and then it's just on to the next one to claim it. 1996's Tetris Attack featured characters from what Nintendo game? A, Super Mario, B, Donkey Kong Country, C, and D, Pokemon Red and Blue.
Tetris Attack. What year was it, did you say?
96.
Still have your lifelines.
Okay, I'm going to use one of my lifelines.
Okay, you can ask the audience, remove two of the incorrect answers.
I'm going to ask the
audience. Ask the audience. All right, so I will repeat the question to the audience to see what they have to say. So 1996's Tetris Attack featured characters from what Nintendo game? Super Mario World, Donkey Kong Country, Yoshi's Island, or Pokemon Red and Blue? So it looks to me like the consensus is pretty much Yoshi's Island. There's a couple of Super Mario World in there. And I believe James Jones said Jigglypuff. So got, I don't know. I'm sorry. He didn't. He didn't. Below him, Austin said Jigglypuff. So so there's okay. that.
Well, James said Super Mario World, and then underneath that he says not Yoshi. So, I'm going to go with Mario World.
Is that your final answer?
That is.
That is incorrect. It is, in fact, Yoshi's Island.
Next question.
So, that, yeah, that actually, Zach, just so everyone knows, the next question, let me read it as Zach wrote it.
Let's see if the audience can get it right.
According to their in-game measurement, which of these dead or alive girls has the largest bust? There you go. That was Zach's next question. I'm not even going to read the choices. It is not important. So there you go. Well, I'm sorry, Donnie. That drops you back to 1,000 points. With way tie for second place, and then we have Combo end in first place. So there we go. We were going to do the top three, but since we've got, you know, three tied at 1,000, we'll probably just – all four of you guys will get prizes. We'll let Combo get his pick first, and then we'll go from there. So Carl will get in contact with you, get all your contact information, all that stuff. So Donnie, thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem. And that wraps it up for Who Wants to Be a Nintendo Wear. So nice. Thank you, everyone in the audience, for being good sports, not, you know, post – they asked the audience. You guys are great. And that will do it. So I think now we hand it on to the Nintendo Free Radio for their segment. All right, is everyone ready to go there?